Catholicism, your Jesuit education, and your judicial philosophy?
It has nothing to do with how I decide cases. My job is to interpret the Constitution accurately. And indeed, there are anti-abortion people who think that the Constitution requires a state to prohibit abortion. They say that the Equal Protection Clause requires that you treat a helpless human being that's still in the womb the way you treat other human beings. I think that's wrong. I think when the Constitution says that persons are entitled to equal protection of the laws, I think it clearly means walking around persons. You don't count pregnant women twice.
He's not the only Catholic on the court. There are four others.
And I've sort of been pleased that has not been a big deal, that there are five Catholics on the court, because I don't think religion is one of the things that divides us. I do think ethnicity is.
I don't think religion is something that divides us. Really, Nino? You don't think religion divides Americans? You don't think there are huge battles over whether creationism or evolution should be taught in science class? You don't think there are huge battles over whether a certain version of Christian prayer should be taught in schools? Or whether or not people should be forced to say oaths upon the Bible? You don't think that's an issue at all in America? You don't think that divides people at all? I don't know what country you're living in. My last story to close is my second run-in with Antonin Scalia. The same day, by the way. I think he was leery of me after what I did the first time. And it has to do with this question of religion. A little background. When I was in law school in 1992, the Supreme Court had just ruled on what they called the peyote decision. Peyote is a somewhat hallucinogenic drug that Native American tribes have used for millennia, certainly used long before the white man came to America's shores. And in a very famous case that had been rendered just a few months before I confronted Antonin Scalia, the Supreme Court had ruled that the state governments could prohibit the use of peyote in religious ceremonies by Native Americans. Now, this would seem to be an express violation of part of the First Amendment, which says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, that's use of peyote was free exercise of religion. In the case, no one denied that this was a legitimate Native American, that he had practiced this religion for many generations. No one suggested he was some guy just pretending to accept the religion in order to get the hallucinogen. And I'll be the first to recognize that this principle must have some limitation, as many aspects of the First Amendment do. I mean, after all, you can't shout fighter in a crowded theater, right? You don't have complete free speech. You can't libel somebody. And you can't practice any religion. There are religions that used to throw virgins into pits. I don't think you can practice a religion that throws virgins into pits. So I recognize there is some restriction on this principle. It's a difficult question. Scalia didn't recognize the difficulty of the decision in the opinion which he wrote. He said that where there are neutral principles, you can uphold them even when they prohibit the free exercise of religion. That was his point. In other words, if you're out to stop a religious practice, there was another decision to try to ban animal sacrifice in Florida, to try to stop descendants of Haitians who practice voodoo, who did animal sacrifice, to try to stop their religion. He was willing to say that was wrong. You can't try to stop someone's religion. But here you had a neutral principle, which is no hallucinogenic drugs. And when you have a neutral principle, that trumps free exercise always, as long as you're doing it neutrally. In another very famous case, decided by Scalia, there was a case of a army medic who was Jewish who wanted to wear a kippah, a head covering. And the head covering was clean, and it didn't interfere in any way with his duties as a surgeon. It was attached to his head with clips, so it never fell out. And they said he couldn't do it because we don't allow anyone to wear head coverings in the ICU. And he said, it's my religion, I have a First Amendment right. And Scalia said, sorry, you lose. Neutral principle, doesn't matter how minor or unimportant it is, no head coverings, sorry, you lose your right to practice religion. So when it came to practicing Native American religions, when it came to practicing a Jewish religion, Scalia was clear. Anytime you have a neutral principle, you're banning head coverings or you're banning hallucinogenic drugs, well, that trumps religious free exercise. Okay, that is one way to view the Constitution. So I asked Justice Scalia, and this was, by the way, after his speech when he was talking with a group of students, about 8 or 9 of them, so it had a much smaller audience. But I decided to see whether Justice Scalia was going to be literal about what he said. Do neutral principles trump free exercise of religion? And I decided to go after his religion, the one he cares so strongly about, Catholicism. I said to him, if Congress were to pass a law requiring that the ministry of all religions be open to men and women, indeed, Congress were to pass a law saying there shall be no sex discrimination. Discrimination shall be solely based on competence for the job. No one shall be denied a job based on sex, male or female. No one shall be denied that. It's a neutral principle. It's not designed to take down the Catholic religion. But in doing so, sure, the Catholic religion would have to open up, at least in America, the priesthood to women. Because it's a neutral principle. You're saying that no one can discriminate. I said, if Congress were to pass such a law, would it be constitutional? And he said to me, well, but Title VII has an exception for religious institutions. And he's right. The law that says you can't discriminate on the basis of sex does have an exception for religious institutions. That's true. I said, but what if it didn't, hypothetically? What if Congress passed a truly neutral law? One that said, as with the law against hallucinogens, as with the law against head coverings, that said that you must hire men and women equally, based on ability, not based on sex. Then, based on what you said in both of those cases, the peyote case and the yarmulke case, in both of those cases, you said, when you have neutral principles, it trumps religious free exercise. You would agree, then, that if Congress were to say that, no sex discrimination of any kind, whether in religious institutions or not, nowhere, neutral principle, then American Catholics would have to allow women to be priests, right? Long pause. Scalia's not one for long pauses. I got him to do a long pause. Long pause. He said, and this is a quote, I'll get back to you on that, unquote. I said, well, why can't you answer the question now? He said, I told you, I'll get back to you on that. I gave him my address. We didn't have email in those days. And you know what? I never got a response from Justice Antonin Scalia. Because it seems that where he's willing to use neutral principles to trump Judaism or Native American religions, he wasn't willing to use the same neutral principles to trump his own honored faith. And I'm not attacking Catholics here. What I'm saying is Scalia is a hypocrite. I proved it twice. I only wish that Leslie Stahl had asked him the questions that stumped him as well. I hope you enjoyed Law School 101 today, The Hypocrisy of Antonin Scalia. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in for Bob Kincaid. Sorry I ran a little bit over. This is Mark Levine signing off.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, look, everybody, we've made it to Friday, the 9th day of May, and in just a few more days, we'll be past that special cutoff here in the hills where I can start thinking about getting some real live, honest-to-God garden into the ground. And then how long can it be? 70 days or so before I'm up to my elbows in fresh tomatoes. Oh, yes, 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 yes. A bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich with fresh tomatoes out of the garden, gently fried hog jowl, and some lettuce out of the garden. Yeah, oh, maybe even a little homemade mayonnaise on home-baked bread. Woof. That's about July, I think. No, we've made it to the end of the week, and it's, I tell you what, I got a deal for you. Given what I've done for the last two nights, I promise if you all behave yourselves, I will not subject you to Red Sovine. I will not make you listen to Teddy Bear or Giddy Up Go. But one false move on your part, one false move, and you'll be up to your eyeballs in dreck and schlock. Don't think I won't do it. I will. I really, really will. But I do want to revisit something later this evening. It turns out, you know, we all focused on how nasty and evil Rod Parsley is, and he is. But we were so focused on that that we didn't notice that in the sound bites of John McCain that are included in that wonderful new video from Brave New Films over at bravenewfilms.org, there's a John McCain senior moment too. And it's a beauty. It's right up there with when he was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina earlier this week, and he said, "Hello, Cleveland!" No, when he said, "I want to thank the students from West Virginia for having me here." I guess there's a couple of students from West Virginia at Wake Forest University. I mean, we slip the occasional intelligent kid out of the hills and hollers and get him into a good school once in a while. But still, really. But at present, 3.5 minutes past the hour, we're going to get back to our regular Friday segment, because I wasn't here last week. Instead, I was at the State Social Studies Fair. You all know about that. Watching a little 13, 14-year-old boy dressed up as Adolf Hitler walk all around the Charleston Civic Center. And you know how horrifying that was. But no, we're going to get back to our regular segment from MakeThemAccountable.com. Carolyn Kay joins us. Hey, Caro, how are you?
Hey, Bob. Doing well. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm sorry. I was a very bad person last week because I didn't realize I was going to be at the West Virginia Social Studies Fair until 7 o'clock in the evening, but yay, verily, I was.
Mighty exciting.
Well, it was. The boy did his best. He didn't win anything, but he did his best. But, yeah, seeing the 14-year-old kid dressed up as Adolf Hitler just... I'm going to be a while getting over that, Caro.
I'll bet.
I had this whole thing that I did Monday about whether or not Hitler has just become another figure from history now. You know, like,
ooh,
you know, Madame Curie or... honest to God, Social Studies Fair, and they dress the part and everything. West Virginia is the only state in the Union that has a state Social Studies Fair. Everybody else has science fairs and yada. We do social studies here.
Well, that's good.
It is. It is. And the kids dress the part. Like, you know, a little girl wants to do the life of Martha Washington. She dresses up like Martha Washington.
You're good.
But this kid had a display that was called Hitler, a Powerful Dictator.
A Powerful Dictator.
I kid you not, Caro. I kid you not.
Ugh.
And he had
he was powerful. And he was a dictator.
Yeah, I know, but the rhetorical question mark at the end, that's what kind of got under my skin. But that was only when I just saw the display. Then I saw the kid. The brown shirt, the jack boots, and the pretty little red armband, too. Even had the painted-on Charlie Chaplin mustache and the greasy haircut.
Oh, man.
And I'm, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm, you know, this kid gets through his school social studies project, social studies fair. He gets through his county social studies fair, and then he winds up at the, and so this kid has been passed onward, and not only passed but elevated onward for going around dressed up as Adolf Hitler.
Or almost glorifying Adolf Hitler.
He won first place in the state in his category.
Oh no!
It was disturbing.
Yeah.
And like I said on Monday, there were some other things too. There was a project that decried anchor babies. You've heard that phrase, haven't you?
Nope.
No, anchor babies are the little Latino babies who are born to illegal aliens, who then provide an anchor for them filthy illegals to stay here in America.
You know what's really, really ironic? Is that Michelle Malkin, one of the most virulent of the anti-immigration people, is one of them.
Really?
Yes. She is an anchor baby. Her parents were Filipinos, and they came over here specifically when the mother was pregnant to have her so that she would be an American citizen. Yep.
I'll be darned.
But what's good enough for her is not good enough for the masses.
I was going to say, that would be not. Yes, not. Well, you know, we learned not too awfully long before he bailed out, you know, before anybody really knew what he did or did not stand for, we learned that, Willard Romney, we learned that he was the child of illegal immigrants. And
oh, I didn't know it was illegal. I knew that that his parents had been immigrants, but I did not know, or one of his mother or grandmother.
Well, his granddaddy fled Utah with his wives when Utah knuckled under and outlawed polygamy in order to become a state.
Okay.
And so they fled to Mexico.
So that he could keep his wives.
Right. Zzz.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now you can do that too, even in the U.S. Right?
Oh, I know, I know. but then his parents snuck back across the border to the land of freedom. I mean, they certainly didn't emigrate from Mexico, but they were born there. They weren't born Americans. So yeah, just another day in the Republican Party, Caro. I mean, John McCain, great patriotic American. Tell me if I'm wrong, because I seem to and granted, I'm 45, so, things are beginning to slip a little bit, but I seem to recall back in the 90s a great big howling $70 million foo-frah over a bad land deal. Do you recall something like that?
Well, yes, I believe I do. But
water, something about water.
And not the Republican water. That was Watergate.
No.
The Democratic water.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Bad white water.
Bad
yes.
White water.
And now he's not directly invested, I guess. But it sure looks like John McCain's got himself involved in a seedy land deal, doesn't he?
I have not seen that. I have been so immersed in the Democratic primary, I haven't seen anything about a land deal for McCain. I'll have to go looking for it because, oh yeah, we want to get into that. Except that, of course, the media are not going to, dig into that. They're not going to push it. They're not going to pursue it. They love John McCain.
Yeah, even though Timmy came out this week and said, well, of course we're giving him a pass, but, later on we'll scrutinize him just like we do every minute.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I believe that, Timmy.
Well, when he says something like that, why not just cue up the theme from Annie? Tomorrow, we'll scrutinize tomorrow. It's always a campaign away.
Why not cue up one of those wooden arms with the boxing glove on the end of it that you just push out there and punch him in the face when he says stuff like that.
Oh, I know. John McCain has gotten behind, he can't get behind our soldiers and to create a new GI Bill, but he's gotten behind some legislation that will let one of his Arizona cronies trade a bunch of worthless grassland and ponderosa pine stands for acres and acres and acres of federally owned property that is, and here's the key phrase, ready for development.
Oh, I mean, that's going on all over the West and has been going on. I mean, hope to God Democrats take over, and hope to God that they find some spine and some cojones to actually get in there and start searching well up their sleeves and start looking and seeing what damage has been done to the public trust, to what we, you and I, and all of us taxpayers own, and see if we can, you know, clean up some of that mess and maybe even bring some people to task for what they've done. I mean, it's just awful. You know, it's so frustrating is that Tom Friedman has, I think his it was his op-ed either, I mean his editorial either for Today or Tomorrow. Tom Friedman of the New York Times, Mr. Global Everything, Flat Earth, you know,
yeah,
the book he wrote, everything's flat, so get used to it, just get in line, and you know, and be happy about it and all that stuff. He has discovered that the American infrastructure is crumbling.
What? Really? This is going to come as such a shock to Republicans.
Oh, I just want to scream sometimes. Of course, and it's our fault for wanting everything and not wanting to pay for anything.
Did one of his caviar deliveries get slowed down by road construction or something? I mean, is that how he discovered it?
No, he went flew from JFK to Singapore, I think, somewhere in the Far East, from a crowded, you know, small chaired, crumbly place to a beautiful open terminal with kiddie play places all over and lovely, you know, beautifully decorated and you know, he just couldn't get over the difference. And then he started thinking about the potholes in the streets and the, you know, all this stuff. And I said, well, Tom!
So there are potholes in the road to Damascus?
People told everybody they shouldn't have to pay taxes, because we shouldn't have to pay taxes for anything. We ought to get all this stuff taken care of us for free. We should get, you know, champagne budget repairs on everything and not have to pay for it.
Yeah, champagne repairs on a Schlitz budget.
on a water budget. And then, you know, and of course, globalization has played a big part in a lot of that, because people can't pay taxes anymore. People are making such low salaries. You know, I can't tell you the number of people who have gotten, you know, laid off of good jobs, because, you know, I myself have been in the technical industry. And, people laid off from good paying jobs. And when they can find work, it's at half what they were getting before.
Sure. We were talking last night. Well, I was producing and chatting at John Fox. He was on air on All Foxed Up at midnight, the 11 o'clock your time. And he was talking about what's happening to gas prices. And there are people out there who have a pretty good track record who have predicted $8 a gallon gas by December 31st of this year.
This year?
Yeah. And
you know, it's just so frustrating, I want to scream, because we could have been gradually raising the taxes on gasoline, because we know we're going to run out of it someday. We know we're going to run out of oil someday. We know we have to be, you know, invest in alternative sources of energy. We knew this was coming. We know it, we know it, we know it, and yet we do nothing. We did nothing until, I guess we got to do something.
And that's always the hardest way to accomplish anything,
is
when you're under the gun.
When you're pushed and you're rushed, and you'll make bad decisions, but then that will prove government doesn't work, see?
Yeah, believe me, I know. Well, at this point in time...
Oh, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, just to you know, I was just trying to put it in a sense of perspective for myself. We're paying $3.90 a gallon here in the hills for regular unleaded. It went up 14 cents in one day. And I calculated what it would take. See, way back when, I had a legitimate reason for purchasing a big gas-guzzling pickup truck.
Uh-huh.
Because I lived deep in the country, and we were four-wheel drive because, you know, they don't scrape the roads during the winter, and, you know, you can make a case for it.
Yeah.
And I bought the truck that I felt we needed and wanted. And I've still got it. It's a 13-year-old truck now. And it has a 37-gallon tank on it, Tara.
Can't afford to fill that thing.
$148 for a fill-up right now. If gasoline goes to $8 a gallon, as was predicted by this one outfit, a fill-up on my truck will cost $296.
Oh, my God. Well, we have to wait and see now, because wasn't it Brazil that a month or so ago announced a huge, huge field that they found offshore?
Yes, true.
And it's supposed to be like a third of the existing proven reserves or something like that. So, I mean, you know, huge, fine.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the question will be, will we be able to force the oil companies in the United States to build enough refineries to get that into gasoline to bring the supply of gasoline up and therefore bring the price down? I'm not real hopeful, because they love those profits they've been making.
Well, they do, and that's the other thing. You know, I do listen to right-wing radio from time to time when I'm out, because I turn on the radio and it's all that's there. It's that, or I can hear, you know, Witchy Woman by the Eagles for the 1,372,693rd time. So you always hear these right-wingers saying, the United States has not built an oil refinery because of the gall-danged environmentalists in the last 40 years.
Yeah, all those environmentalists.
I know.
All 100 million of them are stopping the refineries from being built.
Right, but there's a reason. The corporations hate redundancy, so when they absorb each other, like Exxon Mobil or, you know, Royal Dutch Shell Gulf Texaco or whatever that merger was, then they eliminate, you know, it wasn't environmentalists that closed their refineries. They closed their refineries to cut costs and boost profits.
Yes, absolutely. It was a calculated way of reducing the supply and therefore increasing the price by increasing the profit in two ways. Being able to raise the price because of the scarcity and having lower costs, because the fewer refineries you have, the lower the cost you have to produce the stuff. I mean, it's a dream for them. It's a dream.
Sure it is. And, of course, you know, the saber-rattling with Iran doesn't exactly help. I was reading today, I got an energy note from one of our listeners, and something that I didn't know that just sort of made me go, yeah, okay, the other shoe has officially dropped. Iran no longer does any business whatsoever on the oil markets in dollars.
Right.
Do you remember that before the Gulf War, Saddam Hussein had announced that he was going to go in on a bourse that did not do business in dollars, and the next thing you knew, the bombs were falling? I got a bad feeling about this, Kara.
That's the reason you think they want to bomb Iran. Now, you know, we know that the Bush administration wants to bomb Iran. They are so eager to bomb Iran. They've been making all kinds of accusations. So you think it has more to do with the dollar than weapons of mass destruction dictator that killed his own people.
You know, my wife and I were sitting around watching the name of the movie is Kate Blanchett plays the title role. It was called Elizabeth the Golden Age, and it's about Elizabeth the First, of course.
Right.
But when you look at the history, and it's just a perspective thing for me, Caro, when you look at the history of Elizabeth the First and the number of people that she had summarily executed. I mean, she had, you know, she had her people go in and wipe out entire communities of Catholics. Because, to be honest, the Roman Catholic Church and the papacy put a hit out on her.
They really, did they? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, they really did. And she responded by killing them. But well, under current standards, she would be deemed by George Bush a brutal dictator who killed her own people.
Yeah, well, you have to think about what she grew up with. She grew up under constant fear that she was going to be executed.
Her sister had every plan of doing it.
Yes, right.
Just didn't quite get around to it. Yeah. But you know, there is a sort of a sliding scale where, you know, oh, okay, she's revered and hit, and they were just like that in the 16th century. They couldn't help it.
Well, there is something to that, especially among the ruling classes. I mean, it was truly cutthroat back in those days. But she did a lot of good as well. I mean, the entire merchant class in England grew up during her reign.
Oh, we have her to thank for Shakespeare. Yeah, I'm not on the anti-Elizabeth bandwagon here. I'm more trying to point out that we sort of define people as evil dictators based upon what they can do for us, because, you know, that,
oh, definitely.
You know, that thug in Somethingistan, whether it's Uzbek or Yarmak or the Kyrgyz. That guy is still boiling his political opponents alive.
Oh my God!
But he is a trusted ally in the war on terror, and he also happens to not have any oil. So you know,
well,
you see how
that's a very good friend.
But no, they want Iran so bad they can taste it, and yeah, I think it does have to do with things like the dollar. Because if you're heavily invested in the oil industry, and all of a sudden you got to take a very weak dollar and trade it in for stronger yen or stronger euros, well, you're not getting richer anymore. You're getting poorer or running to stand still. If you can imagine a rich person doing that,
yeah.
You know, a Tom Friedman perhaps that you mentioned, because didn't he disclose that? Yeah, I mean, he married like huge money.
I don't know.
Okay. I think that was him. I mean, you know, we got Tweety Matthews with a house in the Hamptons, and
globalization. No wonder.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you've got more peasants working for you, there's more money to be had now, isn't there?
Well, there is now, but I can tell you that it appears to me that the direction we're going in, what with all the robots coming along, assist the elderly, and you know, so we won't need nursing care or anything like that anymore. Robots for this, robots for that, robots for sports. Did you know that?
No.
My
what?
Robot can beat your robot. Oh yeah. And so pretty soon, all we're going to have is rich people and robots, and the rest of us will just have to starve to death. They'll have to put us out on ice floes or so. Oh wait, there won't be any of those. I don't know what they're going to do with us.
Swim for it. Oh, suddenly
the polar bears.
So, oh God, sooner or later, Kevin Costner's awful film Waterworld will be a training film.
Yeah, we're getting closer. They're already finally starting to think about, you know, what they're going to do for coastlines and things like that. You know what really made me mad? Remember when since sliced bread was started by the SEIU, everybody was supposed to come up with ideas for creating jobs in the U.S. and so on. The idea that I put in, because it was not long after Katrina, and I had been thinking about Katrina, I was thinking about the kinds of things you need to do, develop technologies to protect the coastlines, because it's possible that the sea level could rise 20 feet if all of the glaciers and so on melt, you know. I mean, we're talking a lot of water there. And so I'm thinking, there's huge investments here, half of Manhattan practically, a lot of Washington, D.C., a lot of Florida real estate, including
Rush Limbaugh's house.
Limbaugh's little pad.
Yeah.
$50 million pad. Oh, won't we be sorry to see that go. And all these, you know, really expensive homes and places and whatever are going to be just, you know, underwater. So so I was thinking, what better way to create new jobs than to develop a program of studying what can be done, what the situation is, you know, how to fix it, what the technologies are needed, start building the technologies, and, you know, it would, you would want to do a lot of that here in the United States, so those wouldn't be transportable jobs, right?
Right.
Are we doing, first of all, I didn't win, okay?
Well, no.
I cared, all right? And are we the ones doing that? No. You know who's doing it? You know who's going to be the next great nation?
Who's that?
The Dutch.
Oh, well, they, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that because I was going to go there. They have a concept there called the Polder or the Polder. I'm not sure how they pronounce it. P-O-L-D-E-R. And it's sort of a recognition that because most of the nation lies below sea level, that water is rather indiscriminate and not, and, unbiased in who it drowns. So that the rich and the poor alike are equally responsible for protecting the Netherlands from being inundated. Yeah, so the rich have to get out there and muck the mud alongside the ordinary.
Oh, that sounds like a real communist idea to me.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is. And but they've got experience to teach them, and experience is a rather strict. Strict taskmistress, because they had horrible floods, I guess, in the 30s or the 50s, and thousands of Dutchmen and women died because they had taken what I would call the American approach of, you know, everybody fend for yourself.
Right.
And after that, the Dutch looked up and said, well, you know, we all lost someone we loved.
Right.
And so we've all got a dog in this hunt, and we're all going to work together.
Oh, they must be, they're forcing people to do that, and you're infringing on their freedoms if you force them to work on something like that, because everybody should be free to do exactly what it is that they want and drown.
Yep, because it's right there in the Constitution. I think it's Amendment 1 sub B that says all Americans are free to be dumber than a rotten fence post.
You know what's really amazing to me is that these people who claim that the only legitimate function of government is the common defense, okay, I mean, that's right there in the preamble to the Constitution,
yeah.
Okay? But there's another line in there.
You mean,
one of the responsibilities for government is to enhance the public welfare.
Promote the general welfare. Yes.
You don't hear them say that.
No, they don't. They don't read that. But
oh,
you know
no,
what?
We can't do anything in common.
No, you gave me this beautiful, beautiful image when you mentioned Flush Flemball getting his little, his own little personal gated community flooded, and I had this. I just flashed on this image in my mind of that trundling Jabba the Hutt like girth up on top of his house going, my friends, I need help! And the Coast Guard has to send one of those great big funky-looking the Sikorsky Chinook helicopters that they use to pick up entire, you know, boxcars with to haul him out. Because, you know, oh, we dropped him. Damn. Sorry about that.
What a mistake. So sorry.
But those are the people, when the time comes, Caro, those are the people who will be screaming, as the Bible puts it, Lord, Lord, the loudest.
Yeah. Well, and they'll be screaming, save me and let these other people drown.
Well, didn't we see a perfect example of that in the study that came out earlier this week about disaster preparedness and triage?
No, I missed that.
Missed that? Okay. It's Homeland Security giving out basic guidelines and instructions for people in the public health sector and in the healthcare industries for how they will triage people in the event of a disaster.
Rich people first. Republican contributors first.
Yeah, right. Strict constructionist judges, yeah, high on the list. Pro-life people. Yeah, can't have the pro-lifers dying or nothing. But no, it's an acknowledgement.
They'll be raised up.
Yeah, Yeah, well, yeah. Why not let them die? They want to go anyway, right?
No, I mean in the final days, won't they be?
The dead in Christ shall rise. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like something out of a Romero movie. It's going to be something like Night of the Living Dead, or maybe even the Thriller video from Michael Jackson.
We've already had a taste of it. Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, we have. And even, you know, a tornado that touches down in Kansas, they're still not okay, but George showed up at their high school graduation and thanked them. They actually backed up their graduation so it wouldn't interfere with Jenna's wedding. Yeah, I know. It just feels like a popcorn hull stuck in the back of your throat, doesn't it?
But it's all over. Kansas, Missouri, Arkansas. I remember I lived in Mississippi for a while, and northern Mississippi used to get heavy tornadoes. But the tornadoes are much worse, I think, in all those areas than they used to be.
They are. It's just cyclical. It's a long cycle if it is. Where I grew up is right smack dab in the middle of, we had tornadoes take the roof off of my elementary school, my high school auditorium. I watched one skip down my street one time.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a harrowing experience.
Nightmares about tornadoes.
Yeah, nasty. And, you know, northern Mississippi. And what they do is they go southwest to northeast, I think, if I'm recalling correctly.
Okay.
So it would always be coming out of Iuka, Corinth, and, you know, bearing down on us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, northern Mississippi, I know exactly what you're talking about. But, you know, let's not worry about that because these disaster guidelines say the first thing you do is you go and you overdose all the old people on morphine. And then you go and, you know, deal with the people who have real
and then
problems.
You keep all the records so that you can prosecute those people that did that after the event.
Right. like they did in New Orleans. Sure.
Now, that doctor swears that she did not, you know, put anybody to sleep. I mean, you know, she did not kill them with the drugs. I don't know what happened, but I can't think that it would be such a horrible thing anyway, you know, knowing that help was not going to come for many days.
Yeah, it's the fact that you can't get help there that is the sin.
Yes.
Because, think about it.
The news media got there.
Yeah.
Independent people who went out there who, you know, I know people in Louisiana. I mean, you know, I'm from Louisiana, and I know of people who just attached their outboard boats to their cars and started driving and got to where they could put the boat in the water and did that and, you know, started bringing people supplies, bringing people water, all those things that somehow our government couldn't do. They wouldn't let the Red Cross in, and now Laura Bush is criticizing Myanmar for not taking care of its citizens after this huge tsunami, and they don't even seem to see the irony, these people.
Well, the Johnny on the spot.
The
Johnny on the spot White House press corps was just sitting there with their mouths hanging open catching flies while Laura was doing this at the podium. And I still don't have a satisfactory answer for why she had to do it and George couldn't.
He was indisposed.
I'll bet you. But she gets done with it, and the Johnny on the spot White House press corps can't even bear to ask her a question about it and starts asking her about Jenna's wedding instead.
Well, see, that may be why he was not there, was that they might have asked him some pointed questions. That they might have said, Mr. Bush, do you see any similarity between this criticism here and people's criticism of your handling of Katrina?
Well, we can't be playing the blame game.
What's past is past. We got to move on.
Yeah. It astonished me, though, to see that. I mean, I thought I'd seen it all, but every time I think I've seen it all from them, they up the ante on, or they dig another hole. You know, there's always another sub-basement to how low we can go.
And they never crack a smile. You know, it's never like, look, I know I'm getting away with something here, but it's like,
well, yeah, and
serious looks on their faces, like they never said the exact opposite ever before.
I'm really conflicted though, because the heartache in Burma, Myanmar, is palpable and profound. And I was just reading before I went on the air that even the UN had to stop aid because the damn Myanmar's government, Burmese government, the military junta or whatever we're calling it these days, was seizing the aid shipments.
Oh no.
And wouldn't let the aid teams, you know, the professionals who know how to deal with this stuff, wouldn't let them go to where the problem was.
Because it wasn't about helping the people; it was about helping themselves to the riches.
Yeah, because I guess what Burma has no natural wealth. I don't. I'm painfully ignorant on that corner of the globe.
Don't they have? Serious drugs in that region? Isn't that the Golden Triangle?
Well, it is. It is. So I imagine there's a little smack money coming down.
That's why you need a military junta.
But, no, all of this stuff, you reminded me when you were talking about people with their John boats in New Orleans and everything. At the same time, it's worth recalling, as we imagine the many, many manifest failures of the Bush administration, at the same time that people were literally drowning in New Orleans, one local police officer commandeered an aid boat sent by the Illinois Department of Natural Resources to go and save his wife's frozen embryos.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I will not forget that.
Life.
Yeah. Literally, people drowning, and they buy them because they had to get to the hospital before the water got up to where the snowflake babies were.
Oh, Lord of mercy. They couldn't make more snowflake babies?
I guess not. I mean, but the baby just turned a year. A year old. They went ahead and implanted it. They've implanted two, and oh, God, it was just...
I hadn't heard that story, but yeah. I did hear the story of the Jefferson Parish. Was it the sheriff or the emergency head of emergency stuff or whatever? His own mother drowned in
a nursing home.
A nursing home in Slidell, and that was just awful. And then, of course, the right wingers made fun of him. Well, his story wasn't exactly like what he said it was. How?
He said his shoelaces were brown. They were obviously black. We can't trust a word that he says.
Oh, no, he's not black.
No. His shoelaces. His shoelaces were... Yeah, that's how the right wing operates. Yeah, you know, we can't believe a word he says. He said he had shoes on with brown shoelaces. Look at the picture there. They're black. See, they're black shoelaces. He's a liar.
Or you give him a whole treatise, you know, a whole, you know, pages and pages of information that's all correct, and they find one place that doesn't have a comma. Oh, well, I can't believe any of that.
Jeez.
I remember, yeah, I have this whole list of quotes from George Bush. I mean, really, it really proves that the man is a psychopath, okay? And just like his mother, by the way. And somebody made a comment on a blog somewhere that, oh, yeah, she's got all these, you know, quotes from George Bush. But, you know, there are too many places she puts emphasis on stuff, so I don't trust any of that. Like, George Bush never said those things. You know?
No, not even a little bit.
I mean, I pointed to the White House website where they're quoted. And I have audio on a lot of the things, you know, the trifecta comment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
You know, there's a wonder. You were talking about that list of Bush stuff that you have. If you are ever in need of a Bush resource, they have it in print and they have it in audio. A beautiful, beautiful little resource that's out there. Wspeak.com. Wbyaspeak.com.
Oh, I'll check it out.
And they transcribe all of their audio, and it's not doctored with, it's not messed up. I mean, it just is what it is, and I don't know how they do this job because there's a level of detail that's just stunning. This is for instance from March 25th. It is a beautiful little moment.
Mr. Ambassador, thanks for coming. Ambassador Mamalias is with us today. There you are right there, Ambassador. Thank you. It's good to see your wife. Appreciate you all being here. Ambassador Kokoris of to Cyprus is with us. from Cyprus to the U.S. is with us. Senator, thank you for coming. It's good to see you again.
Don't you just love that?
Yeah, it's good. It's good to see your wife.
Well, you know, it's not that he's stupid. I know that a lot of people have said that from the beginning, and I have never believed that. I have never believed that George Bush was stupid. What I believe is that he is. Most of what a president needs to be worried about or concerned about or thinking about or whatever, he doesn't care about. And it's when he doesn't care about something or when he's trying to be insincere that he really flubs up on stuff. When he's talking about things that he's interested in, like baseball, he's a totally different person.
Yeah, he is. And I think it was Dr. Frank who pointed all of that out in Bush on the Couch.
Dr. Frank did, and also, what's his name at NYU? Three names.
Mark Crispin Miller.
Yeah, Mark Crispin Miller also made that same observation. And, you know, so it's, again, you know, and he's not, Bush is not smart in the sense that we normally think of smart people who...
He's a non-traditional smart guy.
He does, you know, he would never write a great thesis or anything like that. He's not a thinker, but he's very cunning. You know, in when it comes to the meanest thing in the world to do or the most vicious thing in the world to do, like, you know, his first act as president of the United States was to do away with a women's issues group within the White House.
Right.
You know, we're not going to have that anymore. And another time, he wanted to appoint a veterinarian to the head of women's health.
Jesus, no.
To him, I'm sure, and to his little friends, the same people that made up the Freedom Fries thing instead of French fries, those stupid French.
Yeah, Freedom Toast.
And, you know, I'm sure they think that's funny. That's cute. That's funny. And a lot of us don't.
No, I can see why not. And the question is there anybody, you know, by the way, I got to share this with you, Carol. We have come up with a new frame. We have come up with a new meme. In the course of some brainstorming on the Horn section, we talked a little bit about the phrase the mainstream media.
Uh-huh.
You know, you see MSM all the time, mainstream media. There's nothing mainstream about these people. Tim Russert, who makes $10 million a year, wouldn't even bother to take the time to figure out how much a fill-up on a 37-gallon tank in a 13-year-old pickup would cost, you know, $8 bucks a gallon. So, you know, there's nothing mainstream. There's nothing ordinary about them. I'm sick of calling them the professional media. Joe Vecchio invented that one, the so-called professional media. The idea that they are the corporate media is true, but it doesn't get to the heart of the matter. And we, John Fox and Peter Godbold and I just landed on it like a duck on a June bug a couple of nights ago. Henceforward, at least on this network, Caro, they will be referred to as the for-profit media.
Oh, there you go.
You like that?
For-profit, indeed, yes.
Because at the end of the day, that's where all the problems come from. That's where, you know, Lindsay Paris, the shark attacks on missing white girls, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 day a week coverage, that's where all that comes from, is the desire to make a buck as opposed to convey information and keep the public informed. It comes from. It is. It just is.
You're right about that.
So, you know, feel free to make use of that over there at makethemaccountable.com, just any old time you want to. You know, we're an open source kind of think tank here. We don't charge royalties or ask for any. A little attribution would be nice once in a while, but the for-profit media, and it all came from thinking about the for-profit healthcare system that Dennis Kucinich talked about so much.
I was going to say, you know, I'm old enough to remember when there was no such thing as a for-profit healthcare. You know, I mean, there were insurance companies, yeah, but doctors were not involved with insurance companies. And doctors didn't own hospitals. Doctors didn't own laboratories where they could, you know, over prescribe people to have tests at their own laboratories and things like that. You know, that's what's raising the price of health care. These damn billion-dollar salaries that we have to pay these moguls that
yeah, for people who don't even do the brain surgery.
That's right.
I mean, I'm okay with paying lots of money to people who can save lives by clipping off aneurysms deep inside somebody's brain. That guy has earned the right to be just insanely stinking rich. But
not insanely, but stinking rich, yeah.
Well, he's dealing with people's brains. I mean, it's a question of sanity now, isn't it? But, you know, there's a lot of training that goes into it. I recognize, you know, I am certainly not going to be running around anytime soon whistling the Internationale or anything. So, you know, I believe in the right of people to live a comfortable life. The problem is I want other people to believe that I have a right to live a comfortable life, too, and that you have a right, and that it's not like some sort of fraternity.
Or a zero-sum game where I got mine and I'm going to stomp on you so you don't get yours, because that would take something away from me if you did. You know, I don't get it. I don't get it. Of course, you know, there are a whole lot of progressives that aren't much better either. You know, I've been trying for 8 years to get people together to say, why don't we all work together toward getting funding, getting paid, you know, being able to bring more people into the thing. No, can it be bothered? No.
Is there anybody out there... I've mentioned before, and I think to a certain extent you can commiserate with this. You know, you and I and folks like us, we spend a lot of time looking at progressive issues, liberal thinking, good ideas, and we don't muck around a lot with the right-wing crowd that believes, for instance, that everybody paying their way is some sort of sin. And I can't help but ask myself, you know, who are these people that still listen to the right wing and think, yeah, golly gee, they've got it spot on? You know, even the survey data doesn't support that there's many of them left, does it?
I don't know, because again, I've been concentrating so hard on trying to get progressives to do something that makes sense. I haven't been looking at those numbers, but.
Well, the reason I ask is because of something that Dick Cheney said. Apparently, down in Mississippi, there is a guy named Paul Gallo. Gallo's humor, I guess. And he has something called the Paul Gallo Show in Mississippi. Never heard of it. From the looks of things, I don't ever want to hear it. But he, for some reason or other, he had an interview where he got to do for Dick Cheney what, well, never mind. So during the interview, he's talking with Cheney and telling him how the liberal media and its bias won't tell about the happy news in Iraq. And he says, to Cheney, and this is a quote, you know, I look at this, and every once in a while we'll see a story, Mr. Vice President, things like an amusement park opens in Iraq or in Baghdad, which is totally counter to what we're hearing over here as far as the marketplaces being opened, the schools, and things such as that. But I saw a story several weeks ago about an amusement center maybe over there, and I'm thinking this is not what you get in today's media, and this is what Cheney replied. Sit down, Caro. No, that's true. It's what gets covered, obviously, is bad news. That's, you know, if everything is going swimmingly, then that's not news, so it doesn't get the kind of that kind of attention. In Dick Cheney's little bat-filled brain, everything is going swimmingly in Iraq.
Yeah. Well, Cheney is a smart man. He doesn't really believe that. But he knows that's what he's got to say. And he's willing to say it over and over and over. He's willing to lie through his teeth, knowingly lie, false, mislead people. He knows he's doing it. But besides, we did hear about the amusement park.
Yes, we did. And the guy who wants to build it, did you hear the quote from where he was telling the business and government people from Iraq about building it?
They need profit.
Well,
that's what this country needs is profit.
But what's more, he said, I'm a businessman. I'm not here because I think you're nice people. I think there's money to be made here.
That's right.
And it just made it,
no, but there were two different announcements. One was about an amusement park, a Disneyland-style amusement park, because what they need is more thrills and chills in Iraq, of course, you know. And the other announcement more recently than that was a shopping mall and apartment complex kind of place in the green zone, or either in the green zone or right outside the green zone. But they've got to make this really nice area. I mean, it's
well, they're trying to arm twist the Marriott. What's the guy's name? Bill Marriott. They're trying to arm twist him into building a hotel inside the green zone. And even he's looking up and going, you know, look, I'm a loyal Bushy, okay, but I don't feel real good about this. I lay down, you know, we lay a brick, they mortar a brick. We lay a brick, they mortar a brick. And I ain't talking about the cement between the bricks.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's like Apocalypse Now come to life. You know, it's like life imitating art. Instead of art imitating life.
The horror. But it just goes on and on and on, Caro.
And it never stops, and there's always a new twist to it. There's always a new, I can't believe they said that. A new one. Every, you know, couple of days at least.
Going swimmingly over there. But, you know,
They make up their own reality.
Yes, they do. And while we're sitting around writing the history, they're making up more reality. It's this made-up reality that's really become a problem for us. But in Dick Cheney's world, O'Caro, things are going swimmingly because chaos abounds.
Well, what's going swimmingly for him is his, you know, huge profits on his the remaining stock that he has in Halliburton. That's doing beautifully, beautifully, beautifully well. And I'm sure he has investments in oil companies. I'm sure he has investments in armaments manufacturers. You know, it's such a great scam because when you're promoting war all the time, because you know which companies to invest in before you start all this stuff, right? So you're making money off the arms that are sold to the military to go destroy a country. And then you make money cleaning up and rebuilding after you made all that mess.
I said the other night that I am absolutely convinced that that the entire Bush administration has now moved to the point where they're using Joseph Heller's Catch-22 as an instruction manual.
Catch-22 and
yeah.
Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. You know, M&M Enterprises, where they buy the eggs in Malta for 4 cents and sell them in Pianosa for 3 cents, and everybody makes a profit and everybody has a share.
Yeah.
That's them. That really is them. So, you know, I've taken to playing a Merle Haggard song called If We Can Make It Through December.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's like when you get on the ride at the carnival and you thought it was going to be really fun, and it turns out you're just, you know, you just hold on with your knuckles turning whiter and whiter and whiter, just hanging on for dear life.
Well,
and
that's all you can do, because when the country is run by psychopathic control freaks, then there's nothing you can do, nothing you as a person can do, nothing a group of us can do. We have demonstrated and against this war. We have protested. We have done, you know, we don't want this. We've driven the president's approval ratings down to the toilet, and still they don't give up. Still they keep doing incredibly outrageous things, like saying they're going to go bomb Iran, and we don't care what they got. I don't care what they say. They've got nuclear weapons. They're building them right now. In 9 months they're going to come over here and kill us all, and we're going to go kill them first. As if we could believe them.
And again, there is some portion of the American public, I suppose, that does. But I'm not one, and you're not one, and the audience of this network and most of the other liberal so-called media outlets aren't part of it. And you really, you're right. You know, there's been demonstrations. You know, there are people out there. David Swanson over at AfterDowningStreet.org you know, never gives up. Every day in there plugging and fighting and, you know, call your congressman and here's this issue and wear him out. You know, the House with the war funding. I had a congressman on earlier this week who was just disgusted. He said, I hate it, but we're going to refund the war again. And that's Democrats.
I know.
Caro, that's Democrats. That's not Dick Cheney.
I know.
And it's a... It just...
And I have to be honest with you, I'm not sure much is going to change, even if we get a Democratic president in there.
I don't know what the answer to that is, and I fear there may be truth in that. I mean, I don't think the war can end day after tomorrow. I think it should, but I also recognize from having studied history that the greatest danger to a military is when it is in the process of leaving somewhere, not advancing into it.
Yeah.
Because it's what happens when your back is turned that creates real problems. But you know, we had the story earlier this week, Caro, of the 30-year-old man, a sergeant in Afghanistan, who was finally killed on his 7th tour of duty.
Yeah. You know, the amazing thing about that is every time I hear about these multiple tours of duty and stuff, I think back to Vietnam. I told you that I spent a year and a half in Vietnam, right?
Right.
And I would think about, because then there was a draft, and so nobody was ever forcibly sent back, not ever. Usually, most of the people sent over were draftees, and they had one tour, 12-month, period. That was it, end of story, never have to go back again. There were some people, some NCOs and officers who volunteered more than one tour of duty, but it was never a requirement, not ever. And I remember them counting those days. It was called being short.
Yeah.
When you got down to a
short timer.
So you were a short timer, and you were so short, I forget all the phrases now, but they had their little calendars that they would mark off and things like that, and they just prayed and prayed and prayed. They wanted to live through that last month, all down to that last day, and get out of there because they knew they'd never have to go back. And I think about these poor guys and women now.
Yeah.
You know, they never know. And even if you try to leave the military, they can still call you back and grab your ass and send it over there.
And we found the story that came out earlier this week, Caro, that said if we don't do something about PTSD and about giving adequate services to returning Iraq vets, that we will wind up having more soldiers dead from suicide than actually killed on the battlefield.
We already do. We already have a huge number of suicides and murders.
Yeah.
When they get back to the States. It's a horrible thing to do to a human being. You know, I even thought that about Lieutenant Calley. I met Lieutenant Calley when I was in Chulai. He came to do some depositions of some of the village chiefs and things like that at the time. And he said, I'm a scapegoat. And, you know, there was no question that he and his troops did something very, very wrong. But we are the ones who put the weapons in their hands. We are the ones who paid our military to teach them how to hate and to teach them to be skittish, to put them into this environment. These are people who might never in their whole lives have ever done anything wrong.
Yeah.
And yet, we put them in the situation where they did some horrible things. And many of them, the ones with consciences, will never give it up, never live it down. They were the ones that become the homeless veterans, and I just want to cry when I think about it. I just want to cry.
And it's not sadly that's a painfully human response, Caro. But when the tears stop flowing, what's left for us to do? How much more marching? How many more calls to Congress? You know, you say you're not sure that it changes if we get a Democratic administration. I'm not at all sure either. And that's without regard to who winds up being the Democratic president.
Yeah.
Caro, is this just what it feels like to be in the opening days of full-blown, unabashed empire?
Oh. I think, if anything, we're closing down on the empire business because we've totally wasted our resources. We've totally wasted the capital that we have, and our biggest source of capital has always been our people. But now we refuse to invest in people. We refuse to invest in infrastructure. We refuse to invest in people. We refuse to invest in science. We refuse to invest in all of the things that in the past were what made us progress and made us progress so much faster than the rest of the world. But we're the best. We're number one. We're number one in a lot of things like Prozac taking.
We're number one in infant mortality in the industrialized world. Yeah. We're number one in maternal mortality.
Yeah.
But we're happy with that. I'm not. You're not.
No, I'm not. I'm not. And that's why I haven't posted it yet, but I've been waiting for the right time to post in my media newsletter about the recent finding that conservatives are happier.
I've got that story in my stack, too.
Well, yeah, because we see the world as it is and as it could be, as it is versus what it could be. And conservatives go along saying, oh, I got mine, and I don't care about you, so.
Well, and they also bury their heads in the sand and say, well, you know, you're just going to have poor people. There's people out there ain't going to work. It's the Hagee clip that Peter Godbold ran the other night, where he's standing there screaming at the top of his lungs, "Let them starve if they won't work. Let them starve."
Yeah.
And there's nobody out there that it's such a straw man. There's nobody out there saying that the people who are getting public assistance aren't working. I don't know anybody here in the hills of West Virginia who that old stereotype of the fella, you know, sitting on his front porch next to Old Blue with his feet up on the porch rail and a hayseed in his mouth and a corncob pipe and a jug of homemade liquor down at his feet, just taking it easy. Those people don't exist. Those people aren't, they're not here in this part of the Appalachians.
The welfare queen that they touted didn't exist. The favorite Reagan thing, there's this welfare queen that drives a Cadillac. And do you know that who was the news team, Huntley and Brinkley?
Yeah, Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
Okay,
yeah.
David Brinkley, he stayed on the network after Chet Huntley, and he would do these commentaries at the end of the news. And his very last appearance was, you know, like during Reagan or just before Reagan or whatever. He says, you know, I have found out that there are women on welfare who own Cadillacs. And I thought at the time, I didn't do as much, I didn't do any kind of research into public affairs. I knew that wasn't true. I knew that was crap that was made up, you know, by the right wing. And I couldn't believe it. Here's this man who all his life had been thought of as a distinguished newsman. And his very last appearance on television, he lets out, you know, this his real feeling about some of this stuff, which is, if it ain't true, it ought to be true.
Yeah. And so, but you know what? There is a class that sits around with a jug at their feet and props their feet up on the porch rail in America. There is.
Those are the coupon clippers.
The coupon clipping class, absolutely.
They pay a lower rate of tax than the rest of us, too.
They certainly do. You know, Warren Buffett says it every year. Hey, tax season just went by. I just paid a lower tax rate than my secretary does.
Yeah, he says it every year. You're right.
And it doesn't change. Caro, it's been a wonderful hour. Thank you very much, and have yourself a wonderful weekend. I trust spring has finally sprung in Chicago.
Yeah, finally, we do have some warm weather, and it's really, really nice.
It's refreshing, isn't it?
You have a great weekend, too.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye now. Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. you know, there's I've got a story in here somewhere about the fact that Democrats are being excoriated for wanting to repeal tax breaks for the oil companies. And you know very well that because I recognize that there are mamas and daddies who have little Timmy and little Susie in the room or whatever, I really, really, really struggle not to let go with the fun words. But tax break, I mean, I knew they were there, but when you see it in print and on your monitor, and you just have to sit there and be confronted with the fact that a company that this past quarter declared, what, $14 billion, $10 billion in profits on the quarter, not on the year, on the quarter, that they're getting tax breaks for that? How in the world am I supposed to maintain my composure and not just rip my clothes off and go running around in the yard screaming, what the... The oil companies are getting some tax breaks, and we're actually having a debate about whether to repeal them in a time when it's going to cost a lot of people more than me. Soon, $200 to fill up the gas tank. And hey, yeah, the people who bought, you know, sane automobiles because you don't have stuff to haul around and things like that, it's going to cost you $75 to fill up and the oil company is still, and we're just talking about it now? We haven't canceled them? Oh my aching back. So, you know, it's Friday. Like I said, it's the end of the week. If you've got something on your mind, be under the bonnet, burr under the saddle, whatever. Don't let it sit there. You could have something that's absolutely festering by the time Monday rolls around again and you get another chance to talk about it. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. You can also reach the program if you don't feel like being a talking kind of person. You can reach us at bob@headonradio.com. Don't let this stuff bottle up. It is most definitely not good for you. Wear it out. It's Friday night. You know, I've got a couple of Genesee cream ales chilling in the refrigerator because it's Friday night, and that's my little reward. My gallbladder hates it, but it's my little reward. And come later this evening, long about 11 p.m. Eastern time, it'll be Jenny time. Got to relax a little bit. Because we liberals, we progressives, the studies show it, we're not as happy as the conservatives because we live in what is frequently referred to as the reality-based community. And given the topic that we closed out on, Caro and I thought this tune from the Bottle Rockets was particularly appropriate. We'll be right back. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
Quit school when she was 17. Senator on TV calls her welfare queen. Used to be daddy's little girl. Now she needs help in this mean old world. Buys cassette tapes in the bargain bin. Loves Carlene Carter and Loretta Lynn. Tries to have fun on a Saturday night. Sunday morning don't shine too bright. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? Takes two to make three, but one ain't here still. Chasing women and drinking beer. Says nobody understands how he feels. Don't pay them money. baby dance circles on the floor, round and round just like before. Baby fall down, baby get up, baby needs a drink from a loving cup. It's welfare music, watch the baby dance.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Twelve past the hour, and I love the instruction and education that I get as a result of this program. One of the primary benefits of doing this is that I have contact with some of the most amazingly intelligent people that I will ever have the privilege to probably never meet in person. So we meet over the little miracle that is the internet, and I am by far the richer for it. I brought up Elizabeth Rex, Elizabeth Regina, the first Elizabeth, Queen of England, not to castigate her for her ways or the things that she did to keep A, her head atop her shoulders, and B, her butt atop the throne, but rather to make clear that when you're dealing with a bunch of ne'er-do-wells who want to try to cast the world in black and white when there's nothing but shades of gray, you're going to run into problems. And I got this email rolling in from our buddy and the internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman, over at Finnerman Works, FinnermanWorks.com. He says, I would not trust that Elizabeth film to get her name right. I saw that first film with Cate Blanchett, and I am still furious at the travesty of history. The script was not just cutting corners or glossing over the facts, it was making up the story. For example, Francis Walsingham, the Jeffrey Rush character, was not an omnisexual sociopath, he was a dour bureaucrat. William Cecil, played by Richard Attenborough, was not a doddering incompetent. He was an outstanding statesman who was but 7 years older than Elizabeth. I could go on, but you get the idea. Regarding Elizabeth's persecution of Catholics, she was suppressing their plots and conspiracies. Well, like I said, you know, the papacy had a hit out on her, literally. They published it. Those Jesuits, smuggled from across the channel, were not just organizing bingo nights. One of her victims was a man that Eugene wrote a tribute to, a man remembered solely for one poem. And the particular passage is called How Not to Die of Old Age. Fascinating period of time, Elizabethan England, especially the earliest years of early part of her reign, when she was particularly vulnerable. But Eugene writes, anyone named Chidiock Titchborne, yeah, no kidding, really, Chidiock Titchborne, would be used to martyrdom. He certainly did not improve his prospects by plotting to assassinate Elizabeth I. Basketball had yet to be invented, so Catholic youth organizations sponsored extracurricular competitions to put Mary Stuart on the English throne. Chidiock signed up with the Babington team, a group of conspirators who would have inspired the Keystone Cops. The Babington gang had mastered the game of trash talk. They let everyone know that they intended to kill Elizabeth. They put it in writing, tactless and incriminating messages to Mary. Loyola University alumni Loyola University alumni newsletters, and they even put it in painting. The Babington boys commissioned a group portrait. They refused to be ignored. Of course, that's not the best approach to a conspiracy. The Babington boys were arrested, tried, and executed in 1586. All they managed to accomplish was to incriminate Queen Mary. She was tried and executed the following year. While awaiting his death, the 28-year-old Tichborne proved that he was a better poet than plotter. His only known work, it is all too appropriately called Tichborne's Elegy. This is the educational part, of the educational and arts and letters portion of the program, by the way. Tichborne's Elegy. My prime of youth is but a frost of cares. My feast of joy is but a dish of pain. My crop of corn is but a field of tares, and all my good is but vain hope of gain. The day is past, and yet I saw no sun. And now I live, and now my life is done. My tale was heard, and yet it was not told. My fruit is fallen, and yet my leaves are green. My youth is spent, and yet I am not old. I saw the world, and yet I was not seen. My thread is cut, and yet it is not spun. And now I live, and now my life is done. I sought my death and found it in my womb. Wait, I thought this was a guy. Sorry. I looked for life and saw it was a shade. I trod the earth and knew it was my tomb. And now I die, and now I was but made. My glass is full, and now my glass is run. And now I live, and now my life is done, says Eugene. The Elizabethans did have a superior way of saying, hey, dude, bummer. No kidding. But that also takes me backwards a little bit toward the story that Caro mentioned. Headline, Conservatives Happier Than Liberals. Individuals with conservative ideologies are happier than liberal leaners. And new research pinpoints the reason. Conservatives rationalize, that's an important word, rationalize, for the right-wingers in the audience, that's rationalize, R-A-T-I-O-N-A-L-I-Z-E. Big word, keep trying, little conservatives. You'll get it soon. They rationalize social and economic inequalities. What's that mean? Well, what you heard when the cons finally decided it was time to get out of Vietnam. They said to each other, "Well, we ain't doing no good in Vietnam. Them people's been fighting each other for 1,000 years." That's rationalizing. It wasn't time to come home from Vietnam because we were doing something that was manifestly evil. It was because them people been fighting each other for 1,000 years and ain't nothing we can do for them. There's a bunch of barbaric heathens. Whoops, I think I said something similar a couple of nights ago about Afghanistan. But anyway, regardless of marital status, income, or church attendance, right-wing individuals reported greater life satisfaction and well-being than left-wingers, the new study found. Conservatives also scored highest on measures of rationalization, well, which gauge a person's tendency to justify or explain away inequities. The rationalization, oh, this is beautiful. This is some of the data that was in the testing. The rationalization measure included statements such as, quote, "It is not really that big a problem if some people have more of a chance in life than others," and "This country would be better off if we worried less about how equal people are." Well, you know, that's what my forebears always said back down on the plantation. I mean, you can just hear the colonel saying it now, can't you? "This country would be better off if we worried a little bit less about how equal people are. Some people are just born unequal." That's right. To justify economic inequalities, a person could support the idea of meritocracy. Ooh, there's another one of those big words that the Republicans will be years trying to squeeze into the tiny little pea-sized brains that rattle around inside their skulls, in which people supposedly move up their economic status in society based on hard work and good performance. In that way, one's social class attainment, whether upper, middle, or lower, would be perceived as totally fair and justified. Our research suggests that inequality takes a greater psychological toll on liberals than on conservatives, the researchers write in the June issue of the journal Psychological Science. Apparently, because liberals lack ideological rationalizations that would help them frame inequality in a positive or at least neutral light. Wow, I've got a college education and I'm going over that one again. Apparently, because liberals are less happy than cons, because liberals lack ideological rationalizations that would help them frame inequality in a positive or at least neutral light. You know what the best example of that is? Liberal Christians who work dedicatedly and without ceasing for social justice and economic justice. And you know, never mail it in. John Henry, work at it until they drop. Well, on the other hand, if you raise social justice or economic justice or racial justice or gender justice or sexual orientation justice to a member of the right-wing religion industry, they run straight to the New Testament and they say, see here, look here, look here what Jesus done said. He done said, the poor ye have always with ye. See, that means we don't have to do nothing for them. They're going to be there one way or the other. If they won't work, let them starve. Isn't that what Hagee said? By Jove, I do believe he did. I'm pretty doggone certain that he did, as a matter of fact, and I think we can even prove it with his own words in his own voice. That's how hateful these people are. You see, liberals wouldn't be bothered by inequalities if, as Caro suggested, the others would join in and help cure the inequalities. If everybody had a shot, we could take a break. But because there are conservatives in the world, because there are right-wingers in the world, because there are members of mega-churches in the world who are willing to look the other way at things like starvation, it makes it harder on liberals and progressives because we realize we are once again carrying all the damn weight. While the self-satisfied, self-righteous, Pharisaic freaks in the megachurches and the religion industry sit around listening to fat, pasty-faced, doughy, bilious billionaires like Pastor John Hagee say this.
We've rewarded laziness and called it welfare. You no longer look to God, you look for a check in the mail. In the Bible says the man that does not work should not eat. I still think that ought to be the law in the United States of America. If you don't want to get up off your blessed assurance and go to work, starve! I don't care! Starve! I don't feel sorry for you! Go to work!
Go to work. Pastor Hagee, you puzzle-gutted piece of crap. Where do you want him to go to work? Where do you want her to go to work? You don't even want a woman to be able to control her own insides so that she could go to work. She's got to stay home and take care of the babies that you helped to make sure she had to bear. What about the little children, Pastor Hagee? Huh? Starve! They don't get. I want to get up off of their blessed assurance. You know, this SOB sounds like Scrooge before the conversion in A Christmas Carol. Are there no more poor houses? Have the workhouses been shut down? Starve! But the only thing that John McCain can bring himself to do is to try to put some distance between him and what Pastor Hagee has said about Roman Catholics. but never a word about the people that he tells to starve! Sickening, isn't it? Starve. See, in Pastor Hagee's world, Jesus only said, suffer the little children to come unto me, so Jesus could then look at him and say, why aren't you working? Starve! And you're not... If you're lucky, if in an extreme case, maybe some for-profit media outlet might show a clip of him referring to the Roman Catholic Church as an apostasy or as the great whore or something like that. But they won't show you the real inside baseball hatred that this guy traffics in every day. And 10,000 people sitting in his megachurch in San Antonio, Texas, with self-satisfied, smug looks on their face. You know, that's right, brother. That's right. If they won't get off their blessed assurance, let them starve. If a man will not work, he shall not eat. Huh. Guess what? That's out of the Old Testament. Meanwhile, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Nazarene day laborer, looked around him, and all he saw in an occupied country was the poor all around him. Maybe that's why he says, the poor ye have always with ye, because they did. Because they were mostly all poor that he ran with. But he looks around and he says, I was hungry and ye fed me not. I was homeless and ye gave me shelter not. I was sick and ye tended me not. I was in prison and ye visited me not. And for every one of the least of these for whom you have not done it, you have also not done it unto me. Now see, Yeshua had been a day laborer, but he gave up the day laboring gig. Because he had a message, and he went full time trying to spread that message. And so technically he wasn't working anymore. And had he come upon, and I'm sure he did in its own sort of first century AD form, come upon the likes of Pastor Hagee, Pastor Hagee would have responded, starve! And that is the kind of thing that makes liberals and progressives, I suppose, according to the study, less happy than the conservatives. Because, see, the conservatives don't bother to learn. The conservatives don't bother to study. They don't bother to seek. They don't look beyond their gated communities or up over the dash of their 8 miles a gallon Cadillac Escalades. They just consider that life is good for them and to hell with everybody else. And they are thereby defined as happy. Although I haven't read the study, and I take issue with this question of what constitutes happiness. Another study says that the Danish are the happiest people on earth, and they're not happy because of their 54-inch big screen liquid crystal display television sets either. They are content because they have lives that they can stand to lead. And they do look around them because, frankly, they're in a place and in a society that looks outside of itself. And yet I'm to assume that they, even though they are statistically the happiest people on earth, that they are somehow less content than someone who lives in a gated community and, oh God. Rotten bastards that stick their head in the sand and say, it hasn't touched me, therefore the problem doesn't exist. Whew. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
Just because you're poor doesn't mean you work. Don't work.
Exactly. But see, they have to set it up that way. Because they have to justify. They have to justify their hatreds.
Yeah.
And they and it is hatred, Juanita. They really, really do hate poor people.
And could I say something about their survey?
Sure.
According, if it was done like a lot of people in front of others, see, there's a lot of people say don't confess bad things.
I see what you, okay.
In churches, they'll say don't confess anything bad, you know. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Now, I think, but so because it shows that the questions were written questions, or it sounds like they were read, so it was either a telephone survey or a written survey, so I don't think, you know, it was necessarily a public thing. But I do, no, I do understand what you're getting at.
But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a stupid thing anyway. But I certainly wasn't very happy when I was trying to be a right-winger.
Well, that's because you have a conscience. That's,
well, it went against my whole being, you know. I was trying to be a good Christian, and it didn't work.
Yeah. Well, actually, no. You were trying to be what they defined
right.
as a good Christian.
Yeah. Because I wasn't sure of myself when it came to God, you know. I didn't know how to pray or anything like that, you know. So,
but yet, of course, the scripture...
They knew more than I knew.
But they didn't, because you know in your heart how to be a good human being. That's somewhere that they haven't gotten to yet.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure a lot of people that were, you know, that was sure I'm happy. Everything's great, you know. And it may be, and it may not be. I just don't see those people as being happy. You take somebody like Laura Bush. I look at that woman, and I think, I can't believe that woman's happy at all.
I think some of it, Juanita, is what I call the Scarlett O'Hara syndrome. You've seen Gone with the Wind, right? You've seen that moment where Vivian Leigh says, "Oh, fiddly-dee, I'll worry about it tomorrow."
Yeah.
Well, that's that.
Yeah,
I'll worry about it tomorrow, and it passes for happiness.
But I see those people, like, they're empty-eyed, you know. They're in a box that they don't think they can get out of.
Well, they're in a box, but some of them are in a box that they don't even know they're in.
Oh, that's true, and that's really bad. You know,
and I think that's the point of the study, is that by virtue of this, what they call what they define in the article as rationalization, they're happy because they choose to ignore the things that could make them unhappy.
Yeah, and a lot of them do because they haven't had to face it. You know, they've never faced what a lot of people face.
You mean, yeah.
Where's my ride coming from? Who's going to take care of my children when I work, you know, and all that?
Yeah, that's
just a lot of things.
That's what makes this preacher so disgusting, Juanita.
Yeah.
That guy has never faced any of the questions that the working poor face. He's never lost a job because a car broke down. This guy is a multi millionaire and might actually be a billionaire.
Very possibly. You heard what Ken Copeland said.
Yeah.
On that tape, that he said billions of dollars.
Because God told him to get in the billion stream.
Yeah. Well.
I know.
But did you get that email about deck of cards?
I did.
Did you ever hear of that song?
I hadn't, to tell you the truth.
You hadn't?
No. That one...
Well, I think it could line up Yes, your other song, you know, the what was that guy's name?
Jesus, This Is Jimmy.
About Jimmy. Oh, gosh.
And who knew Jesus had a cheesy amplifier with reverb on it and a worn out knockoff of a 57A.
And the woman, she requested it every night, huh?
Yes, she did. I imagine. I imagine she has gone on long since gone on to her reward. She was a sweet
that
thing.
That song really, she really liked it. Huh?
Oh, she did. She did. She did. And she liked the Chuck Wagon Gang and the Happy yes. Goodman Family and yes. the Bill Gaither Trio.
Well, some of them are good.
You know, it's funny because I sent that song to a friend of mine this morning, to Jesus, This Is Jimmy, somebody I grew up with. And she wrote back and said, oh, my God, I hadn't thought about that in years, and sent me a YouTube video of the Happy Goodman Family. And Vestal Goodman with that 8 foot tall hair and the Elvis sideburns.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, and that led me off down the garden path. And the next thing you know, I'm watching the Bill Gaither Trio and the Gaither Family Homecoming and more Happy Goodman fan. And I got to go back into therapy now, Juanita.
I've been prayed for by what's her name, Goodman.
Yeah.
She had a meeting, a revival meeting. I'll tell you a story about it sometime.
Oh, really? You went to a Happy Goodman Family affair?
Well, the church I was going to, they had her there, and she was, you know, doing evangelist work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She was good. She was funny, you know.
Oh, they look, they were mad. The ones who were good were masters of their craft. The little comic patter of the Gaithers and so forth. I saw this one thing where the one guy had put his hand up in the air. He was talking about something. He put his hand up in the air, and the other fellow looked at him and said, "Put your hand down. They'll think you're Pentecostal." And it was funny. It was truly funny. But it was great. I mean, they were great showmen. Those shows came out of the tent revival tradition, and you know what? When it's 95 degrees in the shade, and you're working in a tent, you better be good, or you know what? You're not going to eat that night when the hat passes.
Well, the thing was about when I went to see her, it was that's when I was like tithing to the church, and anyway. They came up with wanting people to donate money to pay for their expenses. And I forget how much it was. It was like a couple of $1,000. And I thought, well, you know. So she's going around. And she was really a likable person, very likable. Anyway, she's going
around. But Juanita, they have to be likable or they can't get rich. I mean, if you spend any time at all when you click across Trinity Broadcasting Network and you watch
a lot of time watching
and you watch that Hagee.
Oh, you know, I never cared for him, but he is smart.
Yeah, he's smart like Fagin was smart in the Charles Dickens.
Oliver Twist.
He's Fagin smart because he's a crook. He's a confidence man. He's a flim-flam artist. He's a grifter and a grafter.
Yeah. I just can't believe those people really believe in God because they would have to be fearful.
They don't.
They can't believe in him.
They don't. You know what? John Hagee and Kenneth Copeland and Joyce Myers and Creflo Dollar and James Dobson and Pat Robertson and that whole bunch are bigger atheists than any atheist that I have ever had on this program.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't believe their flim-flam any more than I believe that I can fly to the moon.
Yeah.
What they believe is that others will believe them. And that is why, for instance, thank you for the segue, Juanita, that is why the likes of John McCain, John Sidney McCain, Thank you, Guy James. Yeah, I got to get with Guy on that because, yeah, we got to start calling him John Sidney McCain all the time. You know, just like they do with, you know, John Wilkes Booth, Martin David Chapman, Lee Harvey Oswald. But the point though is that the reason John Sidney McCain goes crawling after the Hageys and the Parsleys of the world is because John Sidney McCain understands what consummate grifters, grafters, flim-flam men that these people are and how many people's minds they can control.
Right, absolutely. You're right, absolutely correct.
You know, it wouldn't shock me at all to know that John Sidney McCain and Pastor Hagee and Rod Parsley had all sat down around one of those little glass-topped ice cream tables with a fifth of brown liquor and a little pitcher of branch water and had a high old time.
Well, you
laughing at the marks and the rubes.
You remember the guy that used to debate with Malin Murray O'Hare?
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was a big toothpaste, big-time toothpaste.
Sure, and you know
and,
what?
And you know, he drank liquor. I mean, he was supposed to be preaching to the prostitutes, and he was preaching to them all right. About like Jimmy Swagger.
Yeah, they were, shall we say, speaking in tongues. Yeah.
They weren't speaking though.
It was a spirit language. That's what they call it these days, a spirit language.
I always thought that was a stupid combo, you know, because he was just a joke.
Yeah. They are and they aren't because there are people, just like there are people, and, you know, bless her heart, God rest her soul, my grandmother thought wrestling was real. And she also thought that Jim and Tammy Baker were real. And the ability to make her think that came from the same impulse, whether it be Saturday Night Wrestling or the PTL Club.
Yeah.
You know, Jerry Falwell no more believed the crap that he peddled than I do. But what they do believe, and they don't believe it, okay, these... You know, I talk about us using our rational minds. Those are some of the most rational people on earth because they don't believe they know one thing, that they can shake a ton of money out of the credulous and the ignorant and the desperate and the terrified, Juanita.
Yep, they sure can.
Hey, wait, what did I just describe? Republican voters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, I mean, like I said, that's why McCain goes after these people. That's why Bush went after these people.
And they're very much preach about, I mean, they very much have politics, you know, in the church.
Sure. And, you know, if you, like I said, if you drew the little diagram, the two circles would almost lay on top of each other. The kind of people that follow a televangelist and the kind of people that vote for so-called conservative politicians, and I'm talking mainly about poor and lower middle class folks, because you know what, if you are pick one, John Kyle, the other senator from Arizona, or John Cornyn of Texas, or Kay Bailey Hutchison of Texas, or Pat Roberts of Kansas, pick any of them, they don't think that America is benefiting by Republican policies. They represent at the absolute ground, they recognize at the absolute ground level, Juanita, that they are benefiting from Republican policies and screw everybody else. It's the same
thing. I believe you're right about that.
It's the same thing out of this story. Mm-hmm. They rationalize. Well, you know, it's not patriotic unless we give tax breaks to the oil companies.
Isn't that phony rationalization?
No, it's not phony. It's
on a lie.
Well, that's the nature of rationalization.
Is it?
Yeah. To rationalize something is to take something that you know not to be true or not to be accurate and justify it to yourself for your own personal private purposes.
I thought it was more different than that. I didn't know that.
You could. It's also sometimes called sophistry.
Yeah. How does it relate to being rational?
No. It doesn't.
It doesn't.
No. It is to rationalize. It is to make something that is irrational seem rational.
Oh. Okay. Well, I would go along with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's based on a lie, then.
Right. That's what this article is gently saying, that the entire conservative life is a lie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that was the biggest reason for me to quit going to church was, and the last church I went to, they weren't very much political, but they were enough to where I forget about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that spirit of there, you know, and it's not a good spirit.
No, these people condemn in others what is most readily recognizable in themselves. And that is most particularly notable in this Brave New Films video that's come out in conjunction with Mother Jones about Rod Parsley. You know, he screams that Muhammad was inspired by demonic spirits and not the spirit of the true and living God. You want to know who's inspired by demonic spirits? Rod Parsley is inspired by demonic spirits.
I believe a bunch of them are.
And the demonic spirit is mammon. And you know what mammon is.
Uh-huh.
You know, greed. That's the demonic spirit. Because you know what? Rod Parsley's never lifted, and neither has Hagee. I mean, all you got to do is go past TBN and take a good hard look at Hagee, and you know that if you got up close and looked at his hands, they would be ivory soap soft.
Uh-huh.
That man has never worked an honest day in his life, and in his early days of his career, he could probably smell chicken frying from 50 miles away.
Yeah.
Never pays for his own... Oh. That's why I hate him so much. That's why I just can't stand hardly the thought of them. And that's why I probably, more than any other liberal or progressive host, talker, whatever, blowhard, whatever you want to call us, that's why I spend so much time on these freaks. Because I am so offended by fraud. And by con artists.
Mm-hmm.
And by what they're doing and who they're doing it to.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, if you believe the Bible, they got some trouble ahead.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think God likes to be mocked. And to me, that's mocking God.
Well, of course. If there's a God such as many people imagine God to be, and he is retributive, and he is prone to taking out his frustrations and his anger on others who deviate from his path, then, yeah, these people got a roasting coming.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe that's why maybe Yeshua said what he did when he said about the people who pray loudly in the street. He said, for they have their reward.
Right.
And he said, inwardly,
they were like graves, you know. They were beautiful on the outside, but rotten on the inside.
Yeah, but it's the verb tense. They have their reward.
Yeah.
They're getting it now because they're rich here on earth. But what's coming is not going to be anything that anybody would consider to be anywhere near a reward.
Yeah.
It's going to be, they have their reward. They're going to get their punishment.
Yeah. Now... Well,
dear me, you see what you do to me, Juanita?
Hmm?
You see what you do to me?
What? Upset you? I hope not.
No. You don't upset me. Oh, goodness me. I'm always listening inside my own head to what's coming out of my mouth. And all of this stuff is shaped and formed, and that's why I've been playing the last couple of nights, with that business. If you ever wondered why I am the way I am and playing Jesus, this is Jimmy, and talking about the Chuck Wagon Gang and the Happy Goodmans and all that stuff, it's for real. That was what, you know, that's the kind of stuff that was done to my tender little mind as a child,
yeah,
and that's why,
yeah,
I so jealously guard, yeah, Agnes and my children. That's why I try to guard our children against that kind of hokum,
yeah,
and phony baloney being foisted off on them.
Yeah, I know that. I still believe that Pat Roberts has some kind of subliminal stuff on, because I don't think I've ever believed in stuff so much. This sounds far out, but honestly, I think they did something to John McCain, and I think they've done something now to Hillary.
Well, they did do something to John McCain.
You
they
know,
took
put something in there.
They took
in
him up.
Water bottle.
No, they didn't have to do anything that complicated, Juanita. They took him up, yea, verily, unto that high place.
Yeah.
And they
yeah,
said,
that, yeah,
see.
That could be, very well be it.
Yeah, I mean, you know the story. See all around ye.
Uh-huh.
Look ye around. Look down upon it all. It can all be thine if, uh-huh, ye but get upon thy knees and bow down to me. You know,
yeah,
that was the devil, right?
Right.
Well, when somebody comes along and does that in the modern world to somebody else, who do you reckon the person making that offer still is?
Uh-huh.
It's still the devil.
Of course.
So.
You better believe it.
Yeah.
It's very subtle.
Indeed, indeed. Juanita, have yourself a wonderful weekend, dude.
And if you can get that, what's his name that does the records.
Oh, help me.
I'll bet you he knows that song.
Oh, I know. I know.
It's a deck of cards.
Yeah. Well, actually, somebody's already, Cobwebs in the chat room has already offered to send me the file of it, so.
Okay.
It'll probably be making its head-on debut in the next couple of days.
Okay.
All right, Juanita.
And I did read where they've updated it to Afghanistan now.
Oh,
so
dear.
We're in Afghanistan.
Mercy. Well, you take care, all right?
You haven't heard it. You've got some.
It'll happen this weekend, I have no doubt.
Okay.
All right.
You take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's our buddy Juanita, and onward. Hey, who have I got?
Andy.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm alive.
Don't sound so doggone excited.
Well,
No, you're another you've got person suffering from liberal malaise, just like the report talks about.
Oh, I'm not suffering from liberal malaise. I'm suffering from world malaise. If you measured people's age in cynicism and general world weariness, I'm about 3.5 million years old now.
I do know the feeling.
I'm only 28, Bob. This is unfair. But, you know, what can I do? I've got a moron running my country, an actual moron running your country.
But there's been some talk of maybe a vote of no confidence on dear old Gordon.
There's some rumblings in the back benches. He's got a few months yet before any of that kicks off. I mean, a few more disasters, and yeah, there's a good chance of that. But the back benches of Labour always rumble.
That's their job, rumbling, because nobody lets them talk.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I mean, there's a few of the more sort of vocal ones that you can normally rely on to say stuff like saying, you know, he's only got a couple of months, and that's probably fair. I mean, if he doesn't have something good happen in the next few months, I don't see any. I mean, you know, it'd either be an internal coup to try and get the next election for the Labour Party again with a new leader, which is unlikely, or it'll just be a big argument and he'll fall apart and they won't win the next election, most likely.
And that will put the
Conservatives in power, probably.
Talk about out of the frying pan and into the fire.
Well, no, the mitigating factor might be the Liberal Democrats would have the swing, because at the moment it doesn't look like any of the two, the Conservatives or Labour, could actually take it whole en masse. That would require some pretty extraordinary groups of the working class voting Conservative, which is unlikely. They're much more likely to vote Liberal. So it could end up with the Liberals, you know, saying, actually, no, Conservatives, I think, would like to be the deciding interest in a Labour coalition. Thank you very much. So that could happen too, you know, a Labour-Liberal influence government the next time. But there'd be a whole bunch of conditions. You know, first of all, we've got to get rid of all these right-wingers from the Labour Party in ministerial positions. They wouldn't be allowed to serve, you know, stuff like that. But The Liberal Democrats are only slightly better than either of the other two, to be quite honest with you.
Right, sort of degrees of heat and hell sort of a situation, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Liberals are bitterly divided between the left and the right wing of the Liberal Party, because the Liberal Democrats are made up of the Liberal Party and the Social Democrat Party. The Liberal Party in Britain historically has not been particularly liberal. I mean, it's been more liberal than the Conservatives, but, you know, that wall on the right-hand side of me is more liberal than the Conservatives, you know. Everything's more liberal than the Conservatives. But, yeah, that could happen. But, yeah, that's in the future, man. That's not really relevant right now. No, it's all this stuff about Burma or Myanmar or whatever the hell you want to call it.
I much prefer Burma, thank you.
Burma's easier to say. I don't really like the idea of accepting the name of a group of despots, but then, you know, well, they live there, they can call it whatever the hell they like, you know. But the problem is I keep hearing all this stuff from various sources about how they've got to accept international aid, and, you know, otherwise we should do something. Well, grow up, everyone. We can't.
I've seen some of that, Andy, and I keep thinking, or we've got to do something. What does that mean? We're going to make that poor, bedraggled corner of the world better by bombing it?
Well, no, because, I mean, the idea, the French idea is to somehow topple the government with a general's coup, which, you know, could be financed and fine, yeah, okay, but I've never seen it done. Oh, hang on a minute. What has Burma got? Oh, that's right. Tungsten, nickel, a whole bunch of other things that are useful. So that could happen, that's entirely possible. But, you know, the USA would have to be involved, and I don't see China taking that lightly at all. And Burma's army is not inconsiderable.
Right, and it's not like they're going to run in and just install Aung San Suu Kyi as the leader of the country.
If she's even alive, you know.
Right.
I mean, she wasn't particularly healthy a year ago, and I've heard nothing about her since then, you know. And, you know, what with the added devastation at the moment. It just, I don't know, I think the Western world needs to get a collective grip on itself and understand that the reason we keep going into places and interfering in places is because the fascists, the interests and the fascists are the people who run our bank.
Well, that, yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, are you such a 28-year-old cynic, Andy, that you believe that there's no good intention in the talk of humanitarian aid and such like for Burma?
Oh, well, you know, the withering heads on the TV and the Tweety Birds and all of those people, they might actually believe what they're saying. I don't deny that. And there certainly are people who honestly care. I mean, I honestly care about what happens to people all around the world. I'm just realistic to the fact that if it was somewhere where they had nothing of any value, nothing would...
You mean like Darfur?
Yeah. You know, Darfur is slightly different. I mean, the reason nothing's happening in Darfur is because there's nothing in Darfur that's actually worthwhile to the West. But there is stuff in the south of Sudan that's worthwhile to China. So that's why nothing happens there. I mean, this is just an opportunity for the financiers of the world to get their mitts on all the profits from zinc and copper and nickel or whatever else it is they mine there. And, of course, the Chinese don't want them to, because the Chinese supply and work and you know, mine in those areas. So it's the game, man. It's all the great game. People who can't see that are blind, you know.
Right, and but the people who are getting moved around the little checkered board are not they're not the moneyed class. They're not the members of the military junta in Burma. They're people who are worrying about whether they've got enough rice to get through tomorrow.
Well, not even that. They can't cook the damn stuff. They haven't got any wood.
Well, there's that too. Yes.
You know, I mean, if we had an idealistic and socialist world, where the UN was actually a kind of social institution that worked for the people, then this would not be a problem. They would simply go to the government of Burma and say, we wish to supply the food aid to people, and you're going to let us, and then we'll be out. And that would all be done. But it's not. The reason the Burmese government, you can call them a junta if you like, but they're at least as legitimate as, or I don't know, 80 other countries around the world, you know. The reason they won't let anyone in is because we'll steal everything from them. Now, they're a bunch of evil, bloodthirsty bastards, but are they any more evil or bloodthirsty than the people who run our country? No.
No.
These people just don't give a damn. Gordon Brown doesn't give a damn. George Bush doesn't give a damn. None of them care about the people.
Yeah, while we're at it, Sarkozy doesn't give a damn.
No, of course not. All they care about is power.
Yes.
And they measure power by wealth.
And they measure wealth by how much of somebody else's stuff they can get.
Yeah. Well, no, wealth is, you know, money is a representation of wealth. Okay, don't confuse money for wealth. Wealth in our modern age is represented by digits in a bank. It used to be represented by trinkets of gold and silver, you know, or fine cloths and stuff like that. It's labor. Wealth is labor. And it's the sweat off our backs. That's what they live on. I mean, this is why you have, you know, a massive government waste that just puts money into the hands of corporations, because these corporations spread that wealth back up to the top. And the elite get their hands on it. And all of that money, the representation of labor that we call money, goes to them. You know, I mean, what is it? 97% of the wealth in the U.S. now is owned by 1% of the population?
Absolutely, yes.
That's worse than the lots of third world countries. You know that, don't you?
Yes, I do.
I mean, that's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And the fact that the American people can't see how just robbed they are. I mean, literally every time.
But see, that's where I go back and forth, Andy. You said where the American people can't see. And
yes,
I don't know. I don't know if it's can't see or won't see.
Yeah, it's all the same. When you've had the amount of money that they've spent on propaganda and Fox News and all the other networks that just be rubbish at people, you know, of course people can't or won't. A lot of money is spent on it. And this is why I talk to everybody, you know, I talk to people in shops and just bring stuff up all the time, do you know what I mean? You know, just try and get people just thinking a little bit. You know, don't hit them with big facts. Just hit them with subtle thoughts.
Yeah,
you know, like people can't believe I don't have a mobile phone. I don't have a mobile phone. And the reason I don't have a mobile phone is because I don't want, if I have a job, work to contact me at any time of their convenience. I want them to contact me at my convenience. So if they ring my house and I'm not in, they'll leave a message and I'll call them back if I want to. Do you know what I mean? I don't want people being able to get hold of me all the time. That's ridiculous.
Right, and if people... frankly, if somebody is so bananas for you to have a mobile phone... They can spring for it.
Well, yeah, exactly. And they can pay for the contract, too. I mean, you know, you go into the shops and they ask you if you want top-up for your phone, for your pay-as-you-go ones. I'm like, I don't have a phone. They're like, what? And I explain to them, you know, why should I have a phone? You know, why do I want people to contact me everywhere I go? And they're like, oh, my God, that's a really good idea. Work can phone me up and make me come into work. It's like, yeah. The light goes on. Other things, too. You've just got to talk about stuff, man. And that's why I'm not suicidally depressed, you know. There's hope out there. You've just got to keep people informed and keep talking.
Yeah, well, like the...
Which, of course, is what's going to get me killed eventually.
The little lady that I was talking to in the Kroger's the other day who was pricing olive oil for consecrating oil, the next thing you know, she's a West Virginian just like me, and she found out a little bit about mountaintop removal and you know, walked away properly horrified.
Mm-hmm.
But... She's gonna take that, and she's gonna tell the people that she's consecrating with,
yep,
about it. And you know what?
Or her cake group, or whatever it is,
yeah,
she does, everything she does. And they're some of the best people to tell, the old ladies, because they gossip, man. It spreads. They tell their families, they tell their friends tell their families. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes that's not gossip. That's fact. That.
Well, no, gossip can be fact.
Yeah, but that's
the
you know,
terminology for spreading fact at high speed, fact or rumor.
Right, and hence why the for-profit media, that's our new phrase, by the way, feel free to use
right.
It. That's why the for-profit media puts out Lindsay Lohan stuff and Paris Hilton stuff, so we'll gossip about that instead.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, a lot of money's been spent on this, Bob. They understand human psychology, at least as well as I do. Well, maybe not as well as I do, but, you know, because these people put their own preconceptions on top of how people should react, and this is why things go wrong for them every so often. Because people don't act and react in the same way every time, you know. But they're pretty good at what they do with their advertising and their crap TV and Fox News. I mean, Fox News is incredible when you look at it purely in an abstract, you know, objective.
Yeah, just from a...
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Quite frankly, it's amazing. And what's more incredible is how they get away with it.
And the fact that they get people to watch it, and, you know, I understand what Juanita was talking about a couple of minutes ago when she said, I swear they're putting something in there. They're sending some sort of signal, subliminally, because...
Well, subliminal stuff doesn't work the way everybody thinks it does. It's actually very complicated, but... You have to do like a combination of sound and noise and mood and stuff like that for it.
But that is what Fox does.
No, but Fox uses pure, Goering described it very well, pure Goebbels, big lie, big lie, big lie. That's all Fox uses.
But they do it with the graphics, and they do it with the booming, you know, boom, war on terror. And
yeah, that's distraction.
Yeah, and it's all integrated. It's all integrated so that you come away with this one package. And, you know, you know our buddy Rick Goodner wrote the book on it, and he calls it the Fox Syndrome, and the subtitle is Shared Psychotic Disorder.
Well, I'd agree with the Shared Psychotic Disorder, but I mean the symbols and the graphics and everything moving all the time and the noises and the constant overdrumming music and stuff like that is to break your mind so you can't think in straight lines, so they can just hammer home whichever talking point it is this day, do you know what I mean? And it's very successful, and the group they're aimed at are the very group we were just talking about, the people who are over 60. And, you know, they're very good. Once you hammer something into those people's heads, it's actually quite hard to get it out, you know. I mean, people start thinking in set ways as they get older. That's just how it is.
My grandmother died believing wrestling was real.
You know, that's a perfect example, you know. And what we have to do is we have to connect with them on a human basis rather than through the tube. And this is why liberals have to talk to people to get their message across. And, you know, like I say, all you've got to do is hit them with the right point. You know, if it's someone who's into their cars, oil industry, but not the oil industry are running everything and they're going to get you, you know. It just points out, you know, well, the oil industry refine this stuff as well as, you know, produce it. So the money's all in the oil company, isn't it? And they'll be thinking, oh, hang on a minute. You just got to get people talking about things, man. That's all you got to do. That's the one thing that keeps me sane.
And because it performs a therapeutic function for you as well as for the person you're talking to.
Yeah. I feel very good after actually getting a message across. Of course, you know, the converse works as well. If you fail to even, you know, make sense to someone or something, which happens occasionally, then you feel quite depressed. But hell, you know, it's better. Trying's better than nothing.
Look, this is 3 hours a night of therapy for me, and I freely admit it.
Well, you know, hey, it's not bad, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, and you know, sometimes you never hear them, but sometimes the kids sit back here. Sometimes Agnes stands back here, and it saves them from having to have me say it, you know, in the middle of the day on a Saturday or a Sunday or something.
Well, yeah, they get their weekends off then.
Exactly. You know, everybody's got to get a break.
Well, hell yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely. That's another part of the problem with the whole society, you know. I mean,
I miss you, though, and I love you, Andy.
Oh, my God, was that Agnes? What?
Yes, that's Agnes.
Love to Hazel.
Oh, yes, she's good. She's a little drunk and asleep at the moment, but she's good.
Well, you know what? Like I said, everybody gets a break.
But we watch. We listen.
What, are you on, is it holidays or something? Is that what Agnes is about?
No, actually, in a moment of great charity, she came back to grab my beverage mug and bring me some ice.
Oh, that's possibly even better for you.
Don't let him kid you. I feed him, I get him drinks, I come back, I watch Chad, I wave to everyone. He just doesn't tell everyone.
Cool. I'm afraid I can't get into the chat room very much because, I don't know, I think it's just the distance, man, and the web connections, because I can't listen to the stream and chat. It's disastrous.
Well, I gotta say that if it's a choice between the two, I'm much happier having you listening.
Well, yeah, no, I've got to admit, chat, I'm not very good at chat. I should be. I'm one of these computer nuts that grew up with computers from age, you know, God, 6, 5. I don't know. I had a computer when they were like Apple, before it was Apple Mac. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Like Acorn as well had one of them too.
I was going to say you had an Apple when it was a Blossom.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm not very good at chat. What can I say? I kind of lose track of what's going on a lot.
Well, you know, one of the things that Agnes is sort of the same way, but I don't know if you've heard or not, but in a more static form for sharing ideas, we do have a message board / forum type affair that's up and running now as well.
Yeah, right. Okay. I did spot something about that. I haven't really been on much, and my web connection's been bloody atrocious. Like, kids keep breaking into the boxes and ripping all the wires out. You just lose your web connection for a couple of days till they can be bothered to fix it.
Oh, brother.
Well, yeah, they could install armored boxes, and apparently they are, but it's going to take them 40 years to do Cardiff. Cardiff's not very big.
Well, yeah, true, true.
But, of course, it's because it's a corporation doing it, and there's no profit in armoring it and never having to fix it, apparently. Apparently, the profit is in having to replace it all the time.
I can't, I don't have that level of economic skill, but, you know, some accountant somewhere has justified it. Andy, I wanted to ask you about something. I saw a story that just sort of ran across my consciousness a couple of days ago, that there has been a determination made in the UK by some group that all of the surveillance cameras that are a miserable failure. Did that hit the top of the zeitgeist where you are?
They're doing their damnedest to keep it off the news, if that's what you mean. I mean, it was in a few papers, and it was online and stuff a lot, but they didn't really talk about it on the news. I think they mentioned it in passing a couple of times. But, you know, the camera industry is so tied in with the government. I mean, you know, the security companies that supply these cameras are so tied in that it's unreal. I mean, they're installing cameras that can look through people's clothes now in high streets. And, like, there was another study recently that showed that the proportion of perverts, as in sexual perverts, applying for jobs is much higher in the security industry. People sitting there watching cameras.
No, I don't doubt it in the least.
Yeah, but Bob, it was like 1,000 times higher than any other. The next job. And the next job was like school caretakers or something.
Oh, you know God.
I mean? And it's like, they're installing these things, and some scummy piece of shit can be staring at any of the women in the street, but most importantly, mine.
You know, I'm looking at a story here from the Daily Mail.
Oh, God, the Daily Mail.
Yeah. And of course, if I understand things correctly, it has to be titillating and, you know, in order to...
Daily Mail's a little bit like Bill O'Reilly's show. If it was visual, they'd have, you know, look at these boobies bouncing, isn't this atrocious?
Well, that's what I'm looking at right here. It's the headline, Andy, says, "Pedophile escapes jail for abusing girl 11 after judge says she welcomed sex."
That probably wouldn't surprise me as a headline from the Mail. No, not at all.
It has to do with a Judge Robert Atherton.
Yeah.
Who told Manchester Crown Court that the child who was abused had invited John Dixon's attack as she had a sexual awareness that would make someone twice her age blush. And right underneath it is a photograph of the perp walking away with a woman holding a jacket over his head. You're just going to have to go to the website.
No, I know the images. They've shown that image for any number of different dudes, you know, the dude walking away with the shot over his head. But, no, I mean, that doesn't...
No, it's the woman next to him that really makes the photograph, Andy.
Yeah?
Yeah, her blue jeans are... I'd say that her blue jeans are running about 6 inches below her navel, and the bottom of her top is an inch above it. So there's this expansive... Oh, it's horrifying. And she's got these earrings on that are the size of a Danish cruller. It
doesn't surprise me. At the moment, earrings and stuff are a little weird in the UK. The hairstyles are the weirdest thing, to be honest with you. But, right, hang on a minute. Daily Mail, where's the website?
Dailymail.co.uk.
Yeah, .co.uk. News.
And of course, it's pedophile with the proper spelling because we forgot to add the A over here.
Well, that's it. It's on the front page.
Let's see. Last updated 9th May. Yeah. Yeah, it's under news. Pedophile escapes jail for abusing girl 11 after judge. Yeah.
Okay, for some reason I'm not seeing that.
It's there's a picture of the really scary looking woman with the horrifying earrings, and then down there, up down a little way, is the picture of the judge with his coif on. But the thing, what I was going to say is that when I read a headline like this, and I've been educated by you and others a little bit, I see Daily Mail and I go, because it was you mentioned Bill O'Reilly and because he's forever bringing up cases like, oh, scum sucking judge, let it run, and it turns out that the case was a complete miscarriage of justice and the guy had to be let go because like the cops screwed up or something like that. And I see this and I think from time to time we bemoan over here the fact that we have really, really crappy media. And it's almost a little bit refreshing to see something like this coming out of the UK and go, see, it's not just us.
Well, no, I mean, our media is not brilliant over here. The BBC is pretty good. ITV News just copies the BBC. The newspapers are a very uneven mix. The Daily Mail is like upper middle class, The Sun, and The Sun is a Murdoch paper. So that should give you an idea of, you know, The Sun's one of those one syllable, three words at max headline sort of papers. You know, they hate it when they have to put four or five words in, but sometimes they have to. But they normally try to get everything down to just three words that somehow convey meaning. But, yeah, The Sun's atrocious. The Daily Mail is better laid out and better read, you know. The Sun puts stuff in bold print to let you know what part you're supposed to pay attention to.
Like, yeah.
Literally halfway through the story, it'll just be in bold print, you know, and this is atrocious. And carry on, and you're like...
Yeah, just like the crawler does on Fox News.
Yeah, exactly, programming. I mean, it's Murdoch paper, The Sun, so, you know, the Daily Mail isn't, but it really does.
Oh, I thought it was for some reason or another.
No, I mean, it seems like it should be, you know, but it's not. It's completely independent. It's bizarre. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the Sunday Times is a Murdoch paper, too, and I used to buy that. I can't be bothered anymore. I used to buy just to know what you wanted me to know, yeah, just to know what they're trying to tell me, but I know what they're trying to tell me.
Yeah, you figured that out a while. Yeah. You got the memo.
Yeah, well, whatever it is, it's pretty much the opposite, you know. And if it's not the opposite, it's heavily skewed. You know, whatever it is, it's rarely the truth. But yeah, you know, I mean, all of these media sources, for-profit media is a great term for them. I mean, people call them the mainstream media.
They don't share any of my values, and I'm a pretty mainstream guy, so that
maybe
means
they're
that...
not mainstream, because I don't know anybody who really associates with the way that the news is portrayed, even in Britain. I don't know that many people in America would actually think the way the news is portrayed. You know, it's very depressing. But obviously, we have to keep talking about it, you know, and we have to make comments on...
Well, whether it's The Sun or the Daily Mail, you know, I prefer things like The Independent and The Guardian, but...
The Guardian's a great paper, a little bit up itself sometimes, but it is a great paper. Normally has some interesting stories.
But is any of this stuff of the, you know, regarding the persistent ongoing drumbeat for bombing the snot out of Iran...
They barely talk about Iran here. They're just kind of... The media line here is... If we don't talk about it, maybe it won't happen, or, you know, maybe we won't get blamed when it does happen.
So you don't get the sense that the arms are being twisted at 10 Downing Street or anything right now?
No, if you're doing this, you're doing this alone. I'm sure Brown has already said no fucking way. Because an attack on Iran, that's it, ended. Labor ended for two generations.
So at some point, self-preservation takes the higher precedence.
It already has. I mean, you know, the troops would have been out of Iraq by now if the Bush administration hadn't pushed that attack by Muqtada recently. We would have had all of our troops pretty much out by now. We would have had a few hundred or a couple of thousand left at the airport, maybe.
Did you get any coverage over there, Andy, of the fact that we rocketed a hospital in Sadr City?
Yeah, we get all that all the time.
No, I mean the most recent one, because...
Well, I haven't seen the news today, so I have no idea. But, you know, if there's something about American jets being incompetent and blowing the crap out of civilians, we get that. We see the after effects as well. People carrying the bits and, you know, the blood splattered all over the walls and all that.
Well, thank heaven somebody's seeing it, Andy.
Well, yeah, even ITV shows that. Channel 4 is really... I mean, Channel 4 is amazing news. Channel 4... They're like Al Jazeera. They really don't hold it in. You know, they go, look, this is a terrible, like, if you're disturbed by bad, you know, horrible images, look away now. You know, literally, like, because this story is grim. It shows body parts of children, stuff like that. And then they show it.
Well, good. Good.
BBC's a bit like...
Because you realize we're not worth a tinker's damn at it.
No, you guys don't even talk about the war, really. I mean, if you talk about the war, it's brave American soldiers being brave and American.
I've got, I mentioned it with Carolyn Kay earlier, this quote from Cheney from a thing he did today down in Mississippi, where he said that everything is going swimmingly in Iraq. Swimmingly.
Well, Cheney, it is for Cheney.
That was my first thought.
Well, this is the point. I mean, Cheney doesn't lie when he says these things. You know, he's telling you the truth. It's going swimmingly. He is making out like a fucking bandit. And excuse my language, but he is. I mean, he literally, every second that money is being spent in Iraq, his bank account goes up.
Yeah, it does. But
yeah.
And that's so easy. But if we don't... If we're not here doing this, and the few other liberal talkers, you know, the Tom Hartmans and the Malloys and the rest of the last few brave people who are still on terrestrial radio, if they don't talk about it, it doesn't get talked about.
No.
And America goes merrily along, and we look at the gas pump, and it's $3.90 a gallon for, and we go, well, damn.
Well, yeah, you know, hey, it's only 70% of that is pure speculation driven by the oil industry insiders to drive up their own profits. Hey, who cares about that? We'll give you $18 off per tank for the summer. I mean,
yeah, but the thing that drives me crazy out of that ain't going to happen. Nobody's going to do that.
Well, they're not president. They couldn't make it happen.
Right.
Ridiculous.
But we've got people who talk about it as if it was some kind of reality.
Yeah,
and like I said in a conversation the other night, though, if we could have a real, live, honest to God, sincere conversation about regressive taxation, yeah, that highway tax probably should be pulled, because that's what it is. It's not a gasoline tax; it's a highway tax.
Well,
and yet the poorest wind up paying the greatest proportion of their income to keep up the roads that the long haulers and the coal trucks destroy.
Mm-hmm. Because all of that stuff should be going by train, but you haven't got any railways.
Well, there's that, too. Although my congressman proudly announced today that it looks like Amtrak will survive for another 5 years if the bill gets signed. how nice it would be to have real passenger rail. Is British Rail still tolerable to travel?
Well, the problem with British Rail is they privatized it. So we don't have British Rail anymore. We have Railtrack, which looks after the railways badly. And Railtrack has been reformed and remade and repossessed and semi-renationalized and sold off again and semi-renationalized again. And basically, they keep letting people make loads of money by selling them the company. And then when they run it into the ground, we buy it back off them. And it always seems to be the same dudes who run it as well. But they're friends of Tony Blair and Gordon Brown et al. So, you know. But yeah, the rail networks, obviously, because it's privatized, they brought in competition, which, because it's a market, Bob, drove down the prices instantly and made everything much better. Oh, no, wait. Because it's a market, Bob, drove up the prices and made everything much worse.
Ah, darn. For a minute there, I thought you weren't being ironic.
Well, I was getting too ironic, and then I was just too cynical and too depressed about it to be ironic.
So just out of curiosity, with a still functioning passenger rail system...
It still works.
And the major metropolitan centers are still connected, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can get a train from anywhere to anywhere. It's just not cheap as it used to be, and the service is terrible.
So, I mean, can I just get a guess, just out of curiosity? You get on the train in Cardiff, and you want to go to Edinburgh.
Ooh.
Round trip. What are you into?
I don't know, that's a tricky one.
Because I'm just trying to think of, you know, that's the point A and a point B that's a long way away.
Yeah, that's pretty much as far as you can go between two decent metropolitan cities. Let me just have a look, I'll tell you.
And can you go there in relative comfort? You know, given the time.
I mean, you know, a train like that, you'd be in relative comfort. Commuting is a hell of a thing at peak time. I mean, everyone's packed on like sardines, as you can imagine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, during the evenings, and when you're traveling on long distance during the day and stuff like that, it's cheaper. I mean, the prices vary quite dramatically between sort of 8 and 10 in the morning, and then again at sort of 4 till 6. They're really expensive to travel between those times. So if you can travel after that, it's actually quite cheap in some places. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I haven't traveled on the train for a long time, dude. You know what I mean?
No worries.
But yeah, you'd probably be looking at like 80 quid, 160 bucks.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
The reason I mentioned it,
Andy, is because I've been considering gas prices and everything with this ongoing, what I hope is not a pipe dream, of the Horn covering the Democratic National Convention.
Yeah.
And given what gasoline prices are, and because I can't fly, because I can't fly the equipment that has to go, because the equipment will wind up, you know, in Patagonia or you know, Nome, or you know, God knows where.
Yeah, and have a holiday.
Yeah, and I'll be, you know, and you know, me and Guy James and Peter Godbold and Mark Levine will be standing there hollering the program. So we got to either drive or go by train. So I looked it up. It's a long trip because I have to go from here in West Virginia all the way to Chicago and then Chicago to Denver.
Right.
And if and you know, for $300 or so, I can sit in the same chair for 3 days getting there, which is not a good way to travel.
3 days?
Yeah.
How fast do your trains go?
Not very. And they have, and because of the deals that they have with the freight carriers, if they're off schedule by so much as a half a millisecond, then they lose priority on the track and have to get over and take hours and hours and hours on sidings waiting to get back on. But
your train system was rubbish. I didn't really appreciate quite.
Yeah, I'm not exaggerating, Andy. Now, granted, West Virginia to Denver is a poke. But driving in a car, I could, you know, in the worst of circumstances, pull it off in 2.5 days. But anyway, so to sit there in the same chair, which is not real comfortable, for 3 days is like $400 round trip. To be able to lay your head down on a cot that is more like the size of a medical stretcher.
Yeah.
$1,800 round trip.
$1,800. So hang on a minute. It goes from $400 to sitting in a chair to having a bed, $1,800.
Yeah.
Whoa. That's rough, man.
Yeah, it is. That's what you get when you've got a country that's dedicated to subsidizing airlines and subsidizing oil companies and not giving a tinker's damn about the real transportation needs of the real America that really makes America go to the extent that we're still going.
Everything has to go by road in your country. I mean, these haulers who are complaining about gas prices, gas prices are going to go up because that's what the people who run the oil industry want, and they make money off it.
Yes.
If you don't have the option of moving things by rail, it might very soon get to the point where a city runs out of food.
Oh, but we do move a lot of stuff by rail. We move literally megatons of coal by rail.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And we do move containers, you know, shipping containers by rail and so forth. But for the longest, you know, a lot of the reason that this stuff developed is that the railroad companies did it to themselves, you know, the free market. They priced themselves out of the competition and made it cheaper to drag it across the country behind a tractor trailer.
Well, you know, that and the collusion between the oil companies and the motor vehicle companies to do that, you know. I mean, it wasn't entirely the rail industry's fault. Obviously, they could have done more. But, you know, what can you do when you've got people who run the oil industry sitting in Congress?
Precisely.
People with the name Rockefeller in Congress, you know?
Yeah, he's actually got somebody opposing him on my primary ballot next Tuesday,
yeah.
And I'm voting for the guy. He might be a fundamentalist right-wing fascist, but I'm voting for the little bastard just because he's not Jay Rockefeller.
Yeah, damn straight. I don't care who you are. You haven't got a Rockefeller in your surname, so see you later. I'll have you. Bye, Jay.
Jay sent me an email a couple of days asking me if I couldn't please help him with a contribution so he could finance his campaign.
Why doesn't he ask his family? They've got a bit.
But that's why they've got a bit, because the last time a Rockefeller gave away money, it was John D. Rockefeller the first giving away damn dimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they don't, you know, people like that don't put a hand in their pocket. They get everything given to them.
No, they put hands in other people's pockets.
Yeah, yeah, damn straight.
So, you know, I mean, I'm glad I could give you one of these little object examples of, you know, it just pisses me off.
Yeah.
I mean, it is nice. I mean, I'm a member of an actual minority in America insofar as I have a real live, honest to God passenger rail pickup station within 15 miles of me.
Bloody hell.
That makes me a minority.
I've got three stations within 15 minutes of me.
Yeah.
And I'm in a small city. But yeah, I mean, if I want to go to friends up in the valleys, there's you know, two different stations I go to for the valleys, and one station I go to for the two valleys that kind of meet with Cardiff. And there's a few towns up there that I've got friends in, and then, you know, Cardiff Central does everything else. West or east, you know, that's all you got then. But
we killed it. Because we thought, you know, aircraft are the wave of the future.
Well, yeah. And look what's happened to the air industry now. They're getting out of business because of the high fuel prices.
Sure.
The oil industry were very happy to get them going. They're not so happy to help them along now, because that's cut into their bottom line. So the oil industry is shooting themselves in the foot too. Eventually, we're going to get off oil. We have to. It doesn't matter how many of us they kill. We will get off oil.
Yeah, it's not a question that has a disjunctive answer. You know, there's not an either or. It's a we're gonna.
Yeah, well, we've got to get rid of the dinosaurs. The dinosaurs that are always holding us back, you know. I mean, the ruling class is the problem. We all know this. A lot of us don't want to admit it. A lot of us don't want to admit there is a ruling class. But everybody knows we're all being screwed somehow.
Well, that's why I said that classic old image of the hillbilly, you know, with his feet up on the porch and the jug of liquor at his feet and beside the rocking chair. You know, that's meant to indicate somebody who's shiftless and won't work, and that's why he's poor. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, the people who are like that are the people who, you know, that 1% of the country that owns 97% of the wealth, that's them. You know, because the people that have that kind of money, they're not out there digging in the fields. They're not out there paving roads. They're not out there doing a damn thing, Andy.
No. It's a dream they sell. And, you know, the American dream is the ultimate sort of expression of it. It's this idea that if you just work a bit harder, and if you just shut up a bit more, and if you just don't complain when they take your money and your kids and your wife or your husband, if you just work a bit harder and work a bit harder, then you'll be rich. What happened, dude? Sorry. You either get a job where you can afford a comfortable life, or you get a job where you can't. And so you're either working class and fairly well off, which is what now is called middle class, or you're working class. And that's it.
And that working class and fairly well off is a shrinking part of the population around here, too.
Well, yeah, of course it is. You know, they let it expand for a while, and then they contract it through wars, through economic disasters. I mean, you know, I don't believe that, you know, call me a conspiracy theorist, but I do not think that everything in this world is controlled by this shady cabal. But I do see that a lot of things are, or at least they're manipulated, you know, to benefit the rich or to hurt the working class.
That's not a conspiracy. That's reality.
Well, that's the problem. You know, it's like a lot of people on the right and in the for-profit media like to say things like, oh, that's Marx days, when you say anything that criticizes capitalism. It's like, well, yes, it is Marx, because Marx wrote about it. But Marx, if you read his work, was not a crazy right left-wing ideologue who wanted to bring down capitalism. He simply did a sociological study of the economic system capitalism. And if you read his work, it's very clear. It's a sociological study. It's a very good sociological study of capitalism. And nobody else has done a decent one since. Like, a lot of people have interpreted Marxism and expanded that.
Well, and I know that you listen late at night by virtue of the time difference between here and there, Andy. But I had that thing a couple of nights ago where the CEO of one of the banking houses, BB&T, is donating a million of BB&T's dollars to start a center for the study of capitalism at a little university down in the corner of West Virginia.
Oh, well, that's a nice stop to his professor friends who've been doing him favors by, you know, kissing his ass all these years, I'm sure.
Well, not necessarily just that, because I don't know that he's got any buddies at Marshall, but what he does know is that he can do, you know, he'd better do it here in West Virginia, because they rejected his money at a little school in North Carolina, because they're headquartered out of North Carolina. And he can pull it off in West Virginia, because we'll take anybody's money for anything. And the real piece of whip, the real whipped cream on the top of this dung heap is that the primary focus of the little capitalist think tank is to get Marshall students reading Ayn Rand.
Yeah. Because they think if they can program enough people with that shite, and it is shite, I mean, Atlas Shrugged, yeah?
Yeah.
That was her.
And that's what they're going to study, that particular book.
Great piece of literary fiction. I won't read it again. I read it once. I'm doing my best to forget it. I don't know. I mean, the problem with Ayn Rand, there are many problems with Ayn Rand. The main problem with Ayn Rand is that she grew up in the Soviet Union, I believe.
Yes, she was a young woman at the time of the revolution.
Yeah. And so she had she went from totalitarianism to a revolution, which may or may not have, for a while at least, been fairly communistic, to totalitarianism. But she was not intelligent enough, and that's not to say she wasn't intelligent. She was an intellectual, which my favorite definition of an intellectual is someone who's been educated beyond their means. but she wasn't intelligent enough to see through what was thrown at her. She saw the reverse of what was thrown at her. So when everybody talked about communism and stuff like that, she went, oh, that's just bad, so the opposite is capitalism. Well, the opposite isn't capitalism. Capitalism is not a political system, and communism is a political system. Now, communism interferes with the economic system, but capitalism doesn't necessarily have to interfere with the political system. But, of course, what her teachings have given us is this excuse, capitalism, the mystical hand of the market, and all that sort of stuff that she really, really believed in, even though that was a basic misunderstanding of Adam Smith's work in the first place. Because he said, never trust the mystical hand of the market, I believe. Everyone forgets the first bit and talks about the mystical hand of the market, or the mystical hand of the market, or the shadow market, or market forces, or whatever the hell it is.
You mean the market forces that can drive the price of oil up $3 when some mullah sneezes? You know, I'm not interested. That's a crazy way to run a railroad.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at people like Adam Smith, like proper sort of economists, rather than people like Ayn Rand, who basically didn't know what she was talking about. I mean, there's no such thing as competition in a market, really, because a free market, to a degree, will always have collusion between groups. I mean, an ideal example is the auto industry. Yeah, I mean, those companies make parts for those companies, and a lot of the parts are really the same. Do you know what I mean? They just put a different stamp on it.
Right, or the holes are drilled in different places, sure.
I mean, it's all very, very incestuous. Do you know what I mean?
But even these right-wingers, Andy, these right-wingers read The Wealth of Nations. I've read The Wealth of Nations, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You've read it. But these people read it from a faith-based perspective.
Well, yeah.
And so what Adam Smith says, it doesn't. The words that are printed on the pages of Adam Smith don't matter. They don't even have to read it. They just palm off because what they're, we talk about capitalism, but what these thugs in the right wing of your country and my country and many other countries are up to has nothing to do with capitalism. It's the antithesis of competition.
Well, this is the problem. Capitalism isn't competition, really. I mean, capitalism can't be. Just from its nature, it can't be proper competition the way they say it's going to be. It's always going to have collusion.
It's always going to be kill or be killed and eat or be eaten.
Well, no, because it's not even that. It's join together and kill the other ones and maintain our own. That's what capitalism always logically will go to. The oil companies will eat up each other until there's a few big ones, and then the big ones will collude to raise the prices. Oh, God, it happened. You know, the
Walmart.
Rail networks in Britain, the independent rail networks in Britain that all run services interlinking each other, won't compete with each other because they don't run their lines against each other. You know, this train goes to this station and stops, so you have to get on a different network from there on. So there's no...
Oh, yeah, television cable companies in this country. You know, if I want TV cable, and never mind the debate about the worthlessness of television for the moment, this is... Yeah. But if I want cable, I get one... There's one cable company that I can do business with.
Yeah.
And God forbid... But yet these people that... you know, if you start trying to talk about, you know, putting some sort of reasonable regulation on, oh, you know, destroy the competitive nature of the business. Well, they're not competing with anybody, Andy.
Yeah. But their mantra has to be this free market competition. And the reason they have to keep spewing it and keep shouting it louder and louder, and whenever, you know, Tom Hartman or Mark Levine or any of the people who take these people on talk to these people about it, they always, you hear them, especially with Tom Hartman, you know, they'll say something absolutely outrageous about how free markets work. Tom Hartman will say the truth about actually what's going on and why oil prices are so high, say. But while he's saying that, the other person will be talking and talking and talking and getting louder and louder. And they're doing it on purpose, so they can't hear his point, so they can't answer his point, so they can carry on talking about something else.
Classic case of that, Andy. I've got a story here. The American Petroleum Institute has decided to spend literally millions upon millions of dollars over a score of years for what it's described in the Washington Post as a multi-year, multi-media, multi-million-dollar campaign, including advertising in the largest newspapers in the country, news conferences in many state capitals, and trips for bloggers out to drilling platforms at sea, all to try to get people to sort of manipulate the national opinion, where we'll stop thinking of oil companies as money-grubbing, murderous SOBs. And I guess they want us to think about them, you know, as warm, fuzzy daycare centers or teddy bear manufacturers.
Well, yeah.
And you know what? It won't work at first because everybody's still looking up going, oh, Jesus, $4 a gallon.
Yeah.
But, you know, give it a couple of years, and because of the money they're spending, and it will be all over the television, you'll look up and go, oh, $4 a gallon. Well, you know, that's because of all the money that goes into research and development of new oil fields in an increasingly competitive world.
Yeah, the last time they found a new oil field was 1970-something, wasn't it?
Mm.
The discoveries they're talking about are just points where they can drill into the existing beds that we've known about since, well, the big...
Yeah, you mean like the Brazil thing and...
Well, you know, it's like all these reserves they found... you know, it's like in Sudan and stuff. That's not new. We've known about that since, I don't know, the Empire held it. You know, I mean, I don't think anyone's really found new oil beds anywhere. I mean, all they've found is like places where it's easy enough to drill into them to make it somewhat profitable if the government pays for the drilling. I mean, I don't know about the States, but I know that BP doesn't pay for any new wellheads that sinks. We essentially have to pay for that out of our taxes.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned earlier. There's that, you know, Democrats in the Congress are actually quietly whispering because they don't want to be taken out in an alley and get, you know, two in the chest and one in the head.
Yeah.
They're actually whispering about ending, and I really can't do it justice, Andy. They're talking about ending the tax breaks for the oil companies. And I see a phrase like that, tax breaks for oil companies, and I want to stomp my feet, and I want to kick something, and I want to break glass, and run screaming around the room like a loon, because the very idea that the oil companies need a tax break, and they're gonna mail me $300.
But the thing that makes you want to throw yourself off a cliff is that they get subsidized on top of their tax breaks.
So yeah.
They don't pay any tax. In fact, every year, every oil company in the world is paid by my government, yours, and several others, lots of money just for existing.
Sure would be nice, wouldn't it?
Talk about the welfare queens in the States and the welfare cheats over here. Give me a break.
Yeah, you want to see welfare cheats? Yeah, go to a board of directors meeting of ExxonMobil or BP, for God's sakes. Or Royal Dutch Shell.
You want to see welfare cheats? There's a few names. The House of Windsor, the House of Rockefeller, the House of Rothschild, the House of Morgan.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Carnegie's? Mellon's?
Carnegie.
Yeah, sure. Because,
and the others.
Yeah, you know, but we gave them a prettied up name from the last century. We called them robber barons. Because if you give them some sort of royalist name, instead of calling them welfare cheats or, you know, hogs in the trough, well, even though it's a robber baron, they're still a baron, so, you know, they deserve to have something because they're royal.
Well, if they're a baron, they get privilege, don't they?
Yeah, sure they do.
We know what privilege is. It's what Bush has. It's what all those other people. It's a private set of laws.
Oh, you know,
they've got it all right. You'd have gone AWOL during Vietnam. What would have happened to you, Bob?
I'd be a name on a wall somewhere.
Yeah.
Because they pick you up, they take you, and you go.
And you get put on the worst patrols because they know you're just going to try and escape anyway, so they might as well get you killed.
Exactly. Hey, Andy, I got a couple other Blinkens here, but, man,
I hope I hope they haven't given up.
Oh, I do too. Sometimes it happens, though, and but cool. it's great having a conversation with you, and, you know, it's Friday, so I'm really, really glad that you called in because I love the way this stuff just goes all over the place, and it's, you know, it's worth, God, it's worthwhile to talk about this. And
it's therapy for me, too.
But it's not, you know, it's not like we're sitting here, you know, screaming, you know, go out and lop off somebody's head, but just wake the hell up. If you're going to go to the carnival, if you're going to go to Vegas, understand that the house always wins.
Yeah, yeah. And the great thing about this particular Vegas that we all live in, that's called the world, is we can change it if we're willing to take the risk.
Right.
Okay, Bob.
You're there. I'm there. Hey to Hazel.
Yeah. Hey to Agnes.
All right. Bye now.
Yeah, man. Bye.
Wow. It's like a dose of cold water talking with Andy. Let's see who he's got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is it me?
Yeah, it's you.
Hey.
You got to turn your speakers down, man.
Yeah, I'm gonna step outside. That'll be even easier.
Hey, that works too.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I can even get a better signal. I don't know. I know you got other people waiting. I just wanna add a little thing, and I don't want to go too far into it because I know he's going to be a guest on your show and stuff. But Cabela's, have you ever been to a Cabela's?
Oh, yes.
You know all the stuffed animals?
Yeah.
Cabela's is exempt from a lot of taxes because they're a museum.
Jesus. Yeah, you know, it's interesting you would bring that up because somebody, and I won't run, yeah, I know from Cabela's. But I got another story here. Our buddy Greg LeRoy, who talks about tax giveaways and stuff like that, must have walked too far away from his signal. That was Wayne, by the way. I didn't hang up, I promise, I didn't. Greg LeRoy wrote a book called The Great American Job Scam about what has happened to this country in terms of the tax dodges and tax giveaways that taxpayers have to give big companies to come and do business with them. And for instance, you know, that's how that crap happens with Cabela's. You've got a stuffed bear in there, therefore you're a museum. Eesh. And you get tax breaks for it. Well, it just so happens that earlier today I got a story coming out of WSMV-TV in Nashville, I believe. Headline, Report, City May Have to Declare Bankruptcy. And the email that came with this said, 20 years ago, Spring Hill, Tennessee was the envy of the nation. New Saturn GM plant would bring jobs and prosperity to all concerned. The car was cute. The car was revolutionary, the ads told us. Oh, by the way, the entire county, but especially Spring Hill, had to offer incentives. Oh, yes, GM needed millions and millions to come there. Well, here's the real bottom line. And the real bottom line is that Spring Hill is facing bankruptcy. According to a report, unless the city of Spring Hill does something drastic, it might have to declare bankruptcy to balance the budget. Without imposing a new property tax or firing a number of city workers, you know, that's city workers, that's firemen, police force, that's the people, you know, the people who come and pick up your trash, things like that, or firing a number of city employees, the city's budget won't balance. And they're sitting there with a huge tax giveaway auto plant smack dab in the middle of where they are. It's about the same dodge as saying, you know, we're not going to pay taxes on business and occupation taxes on our building here because we're a museum. Look over there. We still got one of those Bobby Bass talking fish head things from... But this is going to happen more and more and more all over the country. I saw a listing from the last night during the show of bankruptcies. Circuit City is going bankrupt. Jeez. And everything. What did Dick Cheney say about Iraq? Yeah, I guess he'd say the same thing about here. That everything is going swimmingly. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Just enjoying the show, as always. You were talking about Adam Smith earlier, and it motivated me to flip through a book by David Corton called The Post-Corporate World. And this one quote isn't in that book, but I guess Smith at one point said, rarely do two businessmen get together for lunch when they're not conspiring to harm the general public.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But
he's flounged about and flogged around as some sort of a saint, Preston.
Yeah. People don't read him so much as they're told what to think about him and his ideas and what he actually said. His real narratives are replaced by these, you know, free marketeers.
Yeah, well, it kind of reminds me. You ever read The Art of War? You know, Sun Tzu.
Been a while, Sun Tzu, yeah. Sure.
Well, the way I've always seen it laid out when you read it is there will be a statement from Sun Tzu, and then there will be eight statements from eight sages saying what Sun Tzu meant.
Okay.
For instance, Sun Tzu says, choose your own ground. And then sage number one says, what Sun Tzu means by that is that one should not attack on a day with an R in it. You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm being a little facetious, but that's what you get with Adam Smith. Instead of people actually reading Adam Smith and seeing some rather perfect, you know, and it's not all sunshine and violets in the Wealth of Nations.
True.
But instead, what you get is like this CEO of Branch Banking and Trust who wants to come into Marshall University and create a think tank that will teach what his right-wing pals think about Adam Smith. I'd guarantee you that, you know, while it's going to be a think tank for the teaching of Ayn Rand and Adam Smith, it's not going to have a damn thing to do with teaching Adam Smith. It's going to be teaching about what Professor Lockjaw thinks about Adam Smith.
And these stories are going to confuse people as to how the economy really works. I mean, they posture as being so anti-tax, but they love taxes and fees. They'll take fees instead. Or if it's not payments to the government, it's payments directly to them. That's why they like to privatize so many different industries and stadiums and highways, cut out the middleman of the government, where we may get some return on that investment, send it directly to the corporations that are taking things over. And all the research and development that the public pays for, we wouldn't have, Bill Gates wouldn't be a multi-billionaire if not for decades of billions of dollars of public money going to public universities like MIT and Caltech to do the research and development on computers, sending up the satellites, we pay for that, electronics, on and on and on. Social spending, socialized investment, privatized profits. To his credit, Bill Gates' dad wrote a wonderful book on exactly this issue called Wealth and Our Commonwealth. Where he gives thanks, you know, to the taxpayers, and he has a much more honest view of the economy rather than the self-congratulatory story that makes it so convenient for people to rip us off and tell us not to expect any entitlements while they're doing it, and stop having this victim mentality while they're victimizing us. But Adam Smith is a mix, and it's certainly not all violets and sunshine, but few people know about this other book he wrote called The Theory of Moral Sentiments.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And this is what David Corton does cite in his own book. And he talked about how beyond our self-interest, we do have a cooperative and even generous part of our nature. And he wrote, however selfish man may be,